What's our show?
It's April 6, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, as always, Norman Chan on my left. Norman, how you doing?
I just ate an orange.
That is a mighty fine t-shirt you're wearing.
It is. It's recently washed.
It is.
And yet still brand new.
Interesting. Joined to Norman's left, Gary Whitta, wearing an also awesome t-shirt. How you doing, Gary?
I'm doing fine. It's not as awesome as the t-shirt that you two are both wearing.
We're wearing one t-shirt right now.
Well, we're wearing the same design, different sizes, different physical
you
objects.
Guys need to talk in the morning before you leave the house. Yeah, and get on the phone and coordinate, because this is a fashion faux pas.
It's embarrassing. I'll be perfectly frank.
This is like in My Fair Lady when they go to the racetrack and those two ladies are wearing the same dresses and hats.
It's exactly like that.
Was that in My Fair Lady?
Yes, it was.
Really? Was it Eliza one of them, or was it someone else?
I don't. Eliza was not one of them.
Okay.
So these new pixel art blockhead t-shirts,
yes,
of you and Norm are very good.
They've taken over my entire life. I replaced the home screen picture of Chloe Bananas on my iPad.
Wow, look at that. And that actually goes very well with the orange smart cover.
Yeah, exactly. And then I also use the Tested wallpaper background for my wallpaper on the iPad.
You have fully testified.
Shockingly well. I thank you. That was good.
Skinned your iPad.
I've skinned my iPad. Yeah, so.
And you changed your Twitter icon.
I did. That's the first time it's changed since last January when the famous Oregon yawn happened.
So can people still get their hands on these t-shirts?
They're available for sale.
Okay.
You can couple left.
Buy it today.
All right.
And when we run out, we'll make more. So we're the first run. If you want to get it fast, you want to get in that first run. If you just want to get it and you don't have money now, don't worry about it. Get it later. It'll be around. We're not taking them away. We've moved beyond that now.
But getting it early, like Apple products, the earlier you get it, you know, it's not going to be outdated.
Right. We're not going to update this in 9 months or a year.
But again, the two of you, unless you're doing like a promotional photo shoot, like you, if you guys are going to go out for lunch after this podcast.
I'm going to have to wear a jacket.
You look like.
I have a jacket as well.
Yeah. You're going to need to cover up
jacket?
Because.
No. Okay.
You look like you work at the same store or something.
Hey, welcome to Tested. Would you like to try our new hip hop special?
Yeah. If there was like a Tested retail store, then this is what
worst
you guys would look like.
Ever.
Hey, yeah. Guys. Oh, hey. You want. Oh, no. We don't have that in extra large. Fuck off.
Yeah, I work at the retard bar.
Right.
When I went to WonderCon this weekend, I was shopping for t-shirts.
Oh, what's up at WonderCon?
And there was a t-shirt that I liked, and I asked the guy, do you have this in an XL? Because, you know, I'm an XL.
Me too.
At the very least. And the guy said, oh, no, we only have these in small and medium in men's.
Hold on,
and
I'm you like, at the very least or me at the very least?
No, I'm me at the very least.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think my feelings are a little hard, you're a comfortable
XL. I'm either an XL or a double X, depending on the cut.
Unless it shrinks vertically and then you get that little hint of belly.
No, if it's that's like the worst.
Not good.
The t-shirts are all cut different ways. If it's like an American Apparel t-shirt, you have to size up one because those are meant for like hipster, thin, skinny hipsters.
No, this is an American Apparel shirt, and it's a comfortable XL.
Okay.
Yeah. And doubles up on shirts anyway.
Yeah, I wear two.
Always.
I get sweaty. Always wear two shirts.
Yeah. So anyway, the guy said, oh, no, we only have like small and medium left. I'm like, dude, this is a comic convention. Why would you even bring those sizes?
Well, hold on.
If it doesn't have an X in it, you're probably not going to sell it to anyone at a comic book convention.
You bring women for medium. And there are – like the skinny nerd is a perfectly normal nerd phenotype.
I know, but I don't think it was an accident. This guy was halfway through the day, was already fully sold out of XL and X, and he's turning people away because they only have the smaller sizes.
Yeah.
I would definitely err on the side of the larger sizes.
Yeah, we always do twice as many XLs as we do any other size.
That's why at PR convention or PR events, when they give out the free t-shirts, it's swag. It's only
Norm
XL.
Always wins.
No, only XL. Oh. They never have any of the mediums.
It's only – the only ones – I rarely want PR t-shirts, but when I do, it's inevitably when they're like, oh, well, how's a medium work?
I don't always
And then that's like a fucking baby doll.
Shirts, swag shirts. But when I do, it's Dos Equis.
Yeah, so a couple of the t-shirts that I wanted were not available in my corpulent size. Mm-hmm.
But you did walk out with some good gear.
I got the very last Captain Kirk bathrobe.
I saw the picture of that on Twitter yesterday.
I was pimping it.
That's a great booth. Did you know – the children's version of that was only $10.
Yeah.
Wow. For kids?
I was tempted to buy a large or extra, extra large.
They were also selling the Yoda bathrobe, which has the Yoda ears on the hood.
Is it all kind of ratty and kind of
It's just kind of like in the earth tone Yoda colors. The
homespun.
And they also had the Jedi bathrobe, which I already have from a couple of years ago. It has an awesome hood that like goes right over your head.
Dude, I would totally get one.
You can put your hands up the sleeves and kind of pretend to be like
a Jedi
Knight.
Was this just like nerdcorebathrobes.com or what's this?
I think it's a UK site, and they were over here and they had the.
And you're the only one I know who can get away with both a Jedi bathrobe and a Captain Kirk bathrobe.
I go both ways.
Yeah, my wife would. I don't wear bathrobes. I'm a sweatpants and t-shirt guy.
Oh, I like to lounge in my bathrobe.
Well, I have a big heavy wool sweater.
Hopefully.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Because
you wear slippers too, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
I wear my crawl slippers.
So while we have 4 or 5 listeners left, let's talk about what we've been testing this week. What have you been testing, Norm? Headphones?
Still testing the headphones. Still got to get some got to swap in a new sound card, actually, so I can get some good 24-bit stuff
24-bit audio. Yeah. Okay. I've been using some different hold on. iPad review is up now.
Yes, that's the big thing this week.
That's our big
Will's
text
iPad
written 2 feature.
Review is up.
If you've listened to the podcast a lot, you already know what I'm going to say.
So here's the one thing that I think a lot of people are discussing about on the iPad review is the iPad. One of your complaints about the iPad is the web browser.
Yes,
and that was kind of surprising because the web browser is what everyone kind of loves about the iPad.
I feel an amazing segue coming on.
Compared to the Android web browser, especially the Motorola browser, and then there are benefits to each. But your big complaint about the iPad web browser in its Generation 2 form, still iOS 4.3, is that it does not compare favorably to a desktop web browser.
It is woefully inadequate compared to a modern Chrome, Firefox.
And so that comparison is interesting in that you would, for the iPad, a still mobile device, you would compare it to a laptop and desktop web browser as opposed to a smartphone web browser, which is what I think most people are still comparing it to.
Well,
and what it's, to be fair, what it's designed for, because it's a unified browser between iPad and iPhone.
But I mean, the way I use that device after a year plus of iPad ownership and use, the way I use that device is much more the browser, at least. The rest of it is very, you know, phone-esque. But the browser I expect to behave like a desktop browser. And I mean, the iOS browser has been shitty for a long time. I mean, it's slow, it loads badly. The tab support is weird and janky. It's not a good piece of software. And I mean, it's not something I notice on the iPhone because, frankly, I'd rather have teeth pulled than browse the web on the iPhone. But when I'm using the iPad, which is a device I use for web browsing a lot, being inadequate is not good. It's something that they need to focus on with iOS 5. I mean, it's pretty clear. So, especially stuff like browser sync, the ability to save files. I mean, it just needs work. One of the other things interesting that came out of the aftermath of that review, though, not to blow your segue, Norm, but is that reading the comments from people who are the people, you know, whenever you post a review of an Apple product or an Android product or pretty much any product that is compared to an Apple product, someone either accuses you of being an Apple hater or an Apple fanboy. And on this one, I had both, which is like a measure of success, I think. If the Android people read this and think that you're an Apple fanboy, and the Apple people read this and think you're an Android fanboy, I feel like I've done a pretty good job presenting
a
balanced
viewpoint. You've trolled everyone.
It's very difficult, isn't it, with Apple to try to be seen to occupy any kind of objective middle ground. It's such a polarized thing.
Yeah, I mean, the people who don't like Apple, if you make any kind of positive comment about their experience, and they do a lot of good work. Then they take that as you're in Steve Jobs' pocket and Apple's bitch.
That's because the people who – both groups, people who like Apple and don't like Apple do so for different reasons. And even within the Apple lovers, it's a polarized group. It's a
religious debate almost.
It's like people who love Apple because they genuinely like the functionality and it's what they're used to. And then the people who like Apple because it's what's in and it's what everyone else is using. And the people who hate Apple because – you know, they genuinely like the customization, you know, customizability.
Well, they value customizability
they like Windows, desktops, and then those people who hate Apple because they just hate Apple and hate the business practices.
So the thing I realized reading the comments yesterday is that the people who really like the iPad, and just to be clear, I do really like the iPad. I think it's a phenomenal product. I think Apple's done something that's different than anybody's ever done before. And it's not a perfect product by any means, but it is a quite a good product. And the reason I like it is because I read a lot. You know, I spend a significant amount of time every day reading websites, articles, books, newspaper articles, all of that content. Like the amount of – the ratio of reading to video viewing or playing games on the iPad is probably like 9 to 1 to 1 if I'm talking about how I use this device.
Right.
And the people who have previously bought iPads or just bought iPad 2s and are liking them and were agreeing with the review or commenting on points in the review seem to be people who are heavy readers. The other people who don't – who see it as a toy and a device that is to be, you know, the complaint I always like is the big iPhone, big iPod Touch. Those are the people who aren't reading as much. So I mean maybe the answer isn't if you don't have a tablet, you should buy an iPad too because it's a good tablet. Maybe it is if you spend a lot of time in front of a computer reading and would like to do that not at your desk or with a hot laptop on your lap, the iPad 2 is something you should consider buying. I mean, maybe that's the defining characteristic of the device.
Tradition.
Yeah.
And reading more than just books.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just about reading Kindle. It's about reading – I mean, literally reading web pages, reading Instapaper. I mean, a lot of times I just dump it into Instapaper because I use the browser to get to Instapaper because it's a better experience.
Right.
And the other thing that came out of your review and also discussions about – and also my Motorola Zoom review in terms of web browsers are alternative web browsers for iOS. And I really hadn't really used – much of them before, to be honest. But having used Atomic web browser for a couple days now, I can't go back to Safari.
So I've been using both Atomic and I went through and bought all the alternative web browsers last week after the Zoom review went up and people were saying, hey, you should try these other browsers. They're good. Atomic's really good. Skyfire is really good. Skyfire is neat because it lets you do Flash.
Skyfire does like fake Flash.
It transcodes on the server.
On their side and then restreams it.
It takes like 15 or 20 seconds.
The iPad can read.
But it lets you watch video that you wouldn't otherwise be able to watch on the iPad,
right,
which is pretty neat.
That's good.
It's worth $2 as far as I'm concerned. None of these really do the things that I want, like bookmark syncing and all that kind of stuff.
Wait. Have you really used
Atomic? I haven't used Atomic that much.
Why is Atomic better than
Atomic
Safari?
Atomic is awesome. I'm going to show this to you right now. And
let's do a video with this.
We will definitely do a video, but I'm just going to tell Gary right now to give him the quick sell. Atomic has tabs. First of all, as a web browser, it is just as fast as Safari.
Okay. Super fast. It looks pretty fluid.
I think it actually uses the fast Safari renderer.
Yep.
So it's the same renderer.
Okay.
But you got tabs. Okay. So I can talk just like on the Zoom.
Okay. So like regular Zoom, desktop tabs.
Desktop tabs.
Okay.
You have private mode for browsing.
So when you want to browse the porn sites that you won't be able to view the video on?
If you don't want to have the
history
in cache.
When you want to buy your wife a special gift.
right. Special gift mode.
That's right.
I forgot.
That's
right.
Or don't let her know. You know, the cake is coming, right?
Yeah.
You can download files locally and sync it to a Dropbox.
Where does it store those files?
Dropbox.
In Dropbox? Oh, that's awesome.
You can download it, tie it to your Dropbox account and download. And it will just sync across Dropbox, any file. And there's tons of customization settings. And you could spoof, so you can have it run and recognize the browser as, you know, whatever you want, Firefox, IE.
All right.
And there's a ton of different settings. There's the full screen mode for browsing, which can show you can, you know, press full screen, it'll get rid of the menu for a bigger window.
Okay.
I like this.
And like tab browsing is just
– it works.
It's what I want.
Is this free?
It's
under $5.
Yeah. Okay. $1.99.
I mean, all of the browsers were under $5.
And it's that much better of experience that you think it's worth paying for?
I think functionally, just having tab browsing and it being just as fast as Safari, that is enough.
Okay.
But it does so much more than that. I haven't tried every single setting, but there are themes. You got gestures on here. You got like two finger swipe left and right for backward and forward.
Okay.
And homepage. You know, it's just way more customizable than Safari is. The only complaint I have, and maybe it does fix this, but and also search, you can search, you know, if you don't want to search just Google, if you hit search, you can search Amazon, eBay, Wikipedia,
all right,
straight from the search bar.
Mm-hmm.
The only complaint I have is still when I browse on a tablet, I want the controls to be on the bottom, not the top.
Oh, because that's where your hands are.
Day one.
You're always having to reach up.
The very first day I picked up an iPad, because the iPad one, and still, I've had two. It's still a two-handed device most of the time. I want the back, forward buttons.
Yeah, your hands are naturally at the bottom of the screen.
I want them at the bottom of the screen.
I'm surprised Apple hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they're getting there with iOS 5, but That seems like a...
Yeah, because otherwise...
Now you mention it, it seems like a no-brainer.
You have to hold it and then tap.
Yeah.
And just having it at the bottom, like where your fingers are if you want to browse a website or even a shortcut bar.
Yep, yep.
That would just make a lot of sense.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Good call.
So yeah, I mean, it's the third-party browsers are worth exploring. We're going to do a dedicated video. I thought about doing this part of Apps of the Week, but I think they're probably worth doing a standalone video just because it's gives you a whole different experience on the browsing side of iOS and Android for that matter. Because there are similar browsers, third-party browsers for Android. So we'll have that coming up before too terribly long. Let's see. We also shot that UEFI BIOS replacement video. You know, Gary, you remember the old BIOS with the blue background. You have to move the mouse cursor back and forth, and it runs at like 240 by mm-hmm. 163 or some mm-hmm. crazy low resolution. UEFI is a new BIOS standard that lets you actually use higher resolution displays, use your mouse and mouse in addition to the keyboard.
Oh, finally.
And BIOS.
Yeah, because every time you'd go into the BIOS, it's like going back in time 20 years.
Yeah, more than that even in some cases it feels like. So,
Basically, it looks like DOS.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So yesterday we spent a fairly significant amount of time trying to get that to capture properly, and then we just gave up and turned off the lights and aimed a camera at the TV, which worked really well.
If it's a BIOS when you're like really fiddling around with like the root structure of the computer and stuff, I think it should be as Good Morning Batman as possible. It should really feel like one of those kind of high-tech Hollywood versions of the user interface.
Do you really want that? I just want it to work. I want no chance of failure.
I don't know. I just like all that crumb.
You just like Hello Batman.
Yeah, I like Hello Batman.
Okay. So that's up. You can see how that's running right now. A lot of people seemed very concerned about the CPU temperature, which was intentionally high. We did not hook up a fan to the CPU cooler so that you guys would have something interesting to see. So and no hardware was harmed during the filming of that.
Yeah, we had that machine. It was extremely bare bones.
Like, yeah, it was on a
motherboard,
cardboard box.
On a cardboard box, power supply, video card, memory plugged in. It wasn't on a full PC. And we did that intentionally just to show you can do it.
So the other thing I've been testing this week is that Body Media Fit armband. I'm wearing it right now.
Oh, yeah. You still got it on.
It is – last night it told me – I went to sleep. We were playing Tiger – we were getting ready to play Tiger Woods. You went to make the face. I
went and made my photo game face.
Yeah. Gary and I have been talking about Tiger Woodsing for about 24 hours now. Have yet to actually play the game together. But I made a photo game face, and it was a horrible abomination that was kind of awesome and terrible all at the same time.
Mine looked like a burn victim.
And this is the thing, just so if you don't know, it's where you take either a photo of yourself that you shoot with like your phone or a camera or whatever, upload it to EA's website, or you can just use the Xbox Live Vision camera.
Not the Kinect camera, which seems kind of strange because it's got a camera. Why? And it seems like a lot of people have Kinect. Why is that not
being supported? It does depth automatically. You'd think it would be a really easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So
and it will map your photographic face onto the 3D model of your player.
And I haven't actually done this in a while. So the last time I tried this was like Rainbow Six 2, I think, for the 360 again. But that was probably, 4 years ago at this point?
Yeah, they've been through several iterations of this technology now.
Well, the nice thing about this one is once you have the basic shape of your face, it then lets you go through and customize stuff. So you can add your eye color back and adjust your weird hair hat and apply a beard and all that stuff. So
all I know is the face that I've had success with these games. I played like a bad World Series of Poker game a few years ago that let you put your face in, and it actually looked like me. You could recognize me.
This was pre-beard, though.
This is pre-beard.
Yeah.
And I'm now post-beard.
I guess
the beard's gone.
Yeah, you're just the shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, given the right technology and the right photograph, it can work. But the photograph I took last night, my skin came out. I was under some fluorescent lights and my skin came out looking kind of red. And so when the face got mapped on, which takes about 20 minutes, the final result was absolutely horrific. It's like having the bandages taken off after an operation and realize that you look absolutely hideous. Like, I mean, it looked like a really bad skin graft.
Well, I did the first one. I didn't read the instructions before I did it, so I didn't take my glasses off.
Oh, that's
so.
Yeah,
then
that's
I had like Zorro eyes where I had a black strap
around
the middle of my mouth.
Paints the black onto your face.
That wasn't good.
If you can take a photograph under the absolute perfect kind of conditions that EA shows you on their website, you know, where you've got uniform color across your face, perfect skin tones.
We should get Norm to shoot us today with the good camera here at the office.
That's a good idea. Maybe we could take a better crack at it and get actual good lighting.
Before and afters.
That's a good idea. And we'll see if it's actually us or EA.
Yeah, exactly.
But the result that I had last, I couldn't even look. I had to delete it. It was disturbing for me to look at it.
Well, my first one looked like kind of a really pointy-faced Simon Pegg.
Okay.
With the raccoon eyes.
Yeah, that's not
it wasn't
anything
good.
I want to see.
Second one turned out pretty good. I was pleased with it. I think I'm going to stick with that. And then the other thing I've been testing is last week Vinny accidentally bought two of these Norelco beard trimmers. So it's the Norelco QT4070. It's a $60 beard trimmer with a vacuum.
Things that I have no use for ever.
That's not for you, Chan. But the neat thing about this is, I mean, I'm sure you know, when I would trim my beard, then it makes a stubble mess everywhere.
Mm.
It's like a 5 minutes to trim, 10 minutes to clean up. And then there's still little bits of beard all over the place.
And that can plug up the sink even.
Yeah, it's bad news. You have to flush it down the toilet instead of the sink.
I pity you guys.
So Vinny bought this thing. It has a vacuum on it, which is pretty cool. Because you adjust the guard, you run it down the side of your face, and it sucks this, not all of the stubble, but a significant amount into a little vacuum compartment.
That's a good idea.
I'm pro so far. I haven't used it a whole lot, but I did a touch up this morning and it worked reasonably well. So,
all right. I've just gone back to shaving and not having a beard. I've decided it's ultimately less hassle.
Well, I was thinking – one of the things I was thinking about doing for the live show maybe next end of this month or early next is getting one of those like master barber guys in to come in from the Art of Shaving – and teach us how to shave.
They do a good job. And there's a Panasonic model that they recommend that they use. They sell it in the store.
A beard trimmer.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, my dad was always an electric razor guy. And like when it came time for me to start shaving, he just handed me a Norelco tri-rotor thing and was like, good luck.
I was an electric razor guy for years because they basically do the job. And it's a lot less hassle. There's no shaving foam, you know, anything like that. It's a lot quicker. You don't have to replace the blades. And then I saw a book that was, I think it was called Microcosmos. It was one of these coffee table books. It was basically just pictures of things taken under extreme magnification.
Oh no.
Sounds
horrible.
You know, like we can get so close into a human hair that it basically looks like a tree trunk.
Yeah.
It was side by side two pictures of human facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
One that had been cut by a straight razor, you know, like a wet shave. And it was like, you know, it was like the tree had been felled by one single
axe blow. Amazing
swipe. It was a nice, clean, straight cut. How you'd imagine how it looks in the razor TV commercials when they show the animation of the razor blade cutting the hair off nice and clean.
It looks like it's cut by lasers.
Right. That's how a straight razor does it.
Yeah.
And then they had a picture next to it of a hair that had been cut by an electric spinning razor. And it looked like the hair had been torn and mangled and it was all horrible. And once I had that picture in my head, knowing that that's what my facial hair looked like, you know, deep down with an electric razor, I couldn't go back to it. I want
deep,
the nice
deep
clean.
Deep down, though.
Well, the thing for me –
can't look bad for Superman.
The thing for me is
– how does Superman even shave, though?
He bounces – he has a mirror.
Well, I mean,
bounces
he has the microscopic vision.
Is that what he does?
He's the only one who would care is my point.
Right. Yeah, Norm's point is he's the only one who would see.
No, but once you know. Then it becomes like a Howard Hughes thing. Like you can feel the germs crawling on your body.
Well, for me, it's more that like the hair under my neck grows in all sorts of different directions. And so it would take – it's like you just keep grinding and grinding and grinding. Then you get a really unpleasant heat rash under there.
Mm.
So I stopped using the electric. I mean I can use the foil kind, the straight across like the bronze.
Right.
But even then, they don't do a very good
job. The ones with
like
the three circular heads.
The rotating ones gouge me up something fierce.
Right.
So I don't ever use those.
Yeah.
So I started using a blade razor. But I never was taught how to do it right. So for a long time, I would go up against the grain. And that's apparently a big no-no. And, you know, three passes over every piece of skin. And anyway, I think it would be informative to have an expert come in and teach us how to shave.
Yeah. And it's a great – everyone should do it at least once. Go to like a real old-fashioned barber shop and get in the seat and have like the hot towels and the hot cream that comes out of the pump because it's heated, the shaving foam.
Okay.
And, you know, a good old-fashioned straight razor, you know, sharpened on a leather strap.
Like in Untouchables.
That's old school. Yeah. Like, and that, your face will never feel smoother than when it's been shaved that way. And it's so smooth, like the hair doesn't even start to grow back for like 2 days. Like, you'll be smooth for a good 2 days.
Well, have you ever thought about
like the hair is afraid to come back out.
Have you ever thought
smooth
about
as an android's bottom?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about using a, just switching to the straight blade?
No, because I think you do have to have some skill to avoid cutting yourself.
Well, I think it's something you'd learn pretty quickly. Like, it's not something you're going to –
I mean, like
– the learning curve is steep but unforgiving.
You know, I'm used to using, like, the Gillette Fusion 8-blade electric power Mach 5 bullshit. Like, if I have to shave even with, like, a disposable Bic, which sometimes in a pinch you have to do, I'll probably cut my face to ribbons because I'm used to using the high-tech stuff.
I used the two-sided for a long time back when I didn't have a beard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing with the – that you just put a disposable razor blade into every once in a while.
And, that's too hardcore
well.
For me.
I found that was less irritating than this 12-blade fusion thing.
See, that's why I'm kind of glad that I've gone back to shaving, is that I'm a sucker for that. Like, you know, you're in the mark and you go, wait, Fusion X, wait, now there's 8 blades.
And it vibrates?
Fuck yeah. Yeah, and it has pattern, is the power version.
Why would I not want that?
Yeah, I buy that. I get sucked into that shit every year. Okay. The funny thing is, the reality has now exceeded the parody. Do you remember when
the
Onion said, fuck it, we're doing 4 blades?
Yeah.
We have more than that now in real life.
Yeah. Well, and we have a 4-blade razor with a back razor blade.
Which is actually useful
sideburns.
For getting like under the nostrils and stuff.
Oh, I do like that. Yeah. I have one of those specifically for trimming hard to shave areas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell
like,
us
like
tell
under
us
the
more.
Nostrils,
yes.
Up under the neck.
Yes.
You know.
Your taint.
The taint.
Yes.
Yes.
This podcast has gone way off the rails.
Should we talk about news instead of rails? The big thing that we didn't talk about last week, because the story broke while we were in the podcast room, is
we need to have someone that's like, when that happens, that brings in like, hold on, I've just been handed this bulletin.
Exactly.
It's late breaking news. We interrupt the story to bring you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Business Week reported that Google is going to re-exert its control over Android. And require third-party OEMs, hardware manufacturers, who want to do customization like TouchWiz or HTC Sense or Moto
right.
Blur to show and confirm, you know, to demonstrate those to Google, so that Google can then okay them to ensure that they meet performance and usability standards.
And ironically, this was happening not just while we were podcasting, but while on the podcast we were actually discussing how things like TouchWiz fuck up what is otherwise a very good OS. It's all these
right.
extra layers of proprietary bullshit that messes up Android.
Well, we talk about that a lot. I mean,
really going at it last week.
Everybody who does a tech podcast talks about that a lot. I mean, it's but yeah, we were talking about it last week. We talked about it the week before. I said controversial things. Everyone involved got pissed off. The Android Pro people, the anti-Android people, everybody was upset.
So it's like, you know, on the one end, you've got Apple, which, you know, obviously rules over iOS with an iron fist.
Yes.
And no one can do anything to it.
No.
Unless you jailbreak it. But officially,
no.
There's nothing you can do. To the other end, who's Google, and it's like kind of hippy-dippy open source Android, which is great. But the problem is it's almost too much at the other end of the scale, where now it's become like the Wild West.
Well, the problem is companies went too far.
So Google now is trying to kind of course correct back to something a little more,
which
where they have more control.
Which is something I've wanted for a long time. I mean,
yeah.
I think this is the best possible thing Google could do for Android. Of course, there are people screaming that this isn't open and all that. But I mean,
it's not open anyway. I mean,
so what are it's never been
code.
Open.
So what
yeah.
are they now saying that things like TouchWiz are a thing of the past, or are they saying you can do it, but we have to approve it?
They're
first?
Saying you can do it, but we have to approve it. First.
I like this.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing is, if TouchWiz worked, if the performance wasn't shit, I would be okay with it.
Right.
I mean, and they fixed that in the newer versions. Norm said that the one at CTIA was quite good. But I mean, the thing is, I don't want that. I want an Android phone. I don't want a TouchWiz phone. I don't want a Moto Blur phone. I don't want an HTC Sense phone.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think we need to do is actually think about these phones not as Android phones
yeah.
all,
yeah.
but think of them as Moto Blur phones and HTC Sense phones. And
well, and here's the thing, and here's why I think Google needed to assert some authority over this is that, you know, Android obviously at this point now. Even though we talk about how it's the tinkerers and the kind of hardcore users like it, it's obviously very, very mainstream.
It's massively mainstream.
This is now the regular man in the street operating system along with iOS.
More so than iOS, I think, for a lot of people.
A lot of people who don't understand a lot about technology have Android phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they look at something like TouchWiz, which is kind of shit, and they don't necessarily know the difference between that and Android. They just think, oh, this Android phone kind of sucks, and maybe they don't pick up the next one, which might not have that problem.
Well, and so there's a couple of things going on here. First is the complaint that this isn't – that Google has long said this is an open source product. You can do whatever you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
They told app developers that, and I know they mentioned that, you know, that was used in a hardware context at some point or other. That hasn't actually changed. I mean, that is not a changing situation. Right. You can still do whatever you want with it.
Right.
You're just not going to be able to call it an Android phone, and you're not going to be able to say it's powered by Google.
Oh, is that
and,
right?
And they're not going to let you use the Google closed. Because one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that there are a significant number of closed source applications that run on top of Android. So, for example, the Gmail client is a closed source application.
Mm-hmm.
Google Calendar, Google Maps, Android Market, was a few others that I'm forgetting. A couple of drivers that are kind of low-level drivers.
Google Maps, I would presume.
Google Maps, of course, and the nav, yeah. So if you want to run that stuff, then you're – if you want to run – build a phone that uses Android as the kernel and as the OS without including those apps, you're more than welcome to.
Right.
Keep download Froyo. Go fucking crazy. But if you want to be able to include Gmail and you want to have the full Google connection and all that, then you have to maintain their interface and usability standards, which I think is a perfectly reasonable thing. Because, I mean, if I was Google and I looked at the Samsung Captivate, I would be – I mean, that is the worst possible experience. Because then everybody who bought a Captivate, all 2 million or however many people it was – I can't remember the number off the top of my head – those people are all going to think, oh, man, Android is shit. There's no way I'm ever buying another Android phone again.
Right.
Because, you know, when you – when it's this isn't a purchase – that you can walk away from after a year or two, after 6 months if it's no good. Most people are stuck with phones for 18 months to 2.5 years, mm-hmm. depending on what their contracts are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it gives them a lot of time to fester and be angry. And we're just now approaching the 18-month mark for people who bought into the original Droid, which was, of course, a stock Eclair experience,
right.
2.0.
Right.
So I mean, I think over the next six to 12 months, we're going to see some really interesting stuff happen as the first wave of Android phones, those people's contracts expire, and then they have to decide whether they're going to go buy back into Android or they're going to go to iOS or something else.
Now, I haven't been following this closely, but I'm guessing that there are that some people more on the kind of the end of the hippie granola contingent of Android users are reacting negatively and saying that this is Google being evil. But I feel like this is Google doing what they feel now is necessary to protect the user experience and protect the Android brand, because it's getting shat on by some of these bad third-party experiences.
Right. Even the good third-party experiences aren't particularly good is the fundamental problem. And yeah, I mean ultimately the people who Google needs to protect in this situation are the people who are paying money for these phones.
I mean, can you imagine if Apple allowed AT&T and Verizon to jailbreak iOS and sell iPhones with whatever with shit they would come up with on top of it?
Right.
Like, it would be awful.
Well, I mean, the other side of it is, of course, that they are – I mean, this is a less open way to run an OS, right?
Yes.
I mean, it is fundamentally you can't download it and do whatever the fuck you want with it and then release a terrible product if you don't want to.
Right.
I mean, if you do want to, rather.
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine – I mean, when you're competing with Apple, who is tightly controlling the experience, looser control is ultimately a good move for the consumer. It may be worse for the OEMs. Frankly, I don't care about the OEMs who are making bad experiences.
No, I feel like this is going to be ultimately a good move for consumers. It's going to make the phones better by making them more about the OS that Google built and allowing it to cut through the bullshit that they slap on top.
Well, and I mean, if it means that you can buy a Droid 2, a Droid X2 with Moto Blur or with the stock Android interface,
mm-hmm.
I mean, let the consumers choose. That's what, you know, do the development's already happening. Give people the choice of which UI to use.
A lot of consumers don't know better.
Well, that's fine.
True. They'll just use whatever comes with the phone and never change it.
Well, okay. So then Google should make them prompt at the beginning. Do you want to use Motorola's thing or do you want to use ours? And then do the install from there. It's a bad experience probably for the consumers.
A lot of people don't care.
That also is true.
No, I would just take that shit off.
Yeah.
I would just force them to take it off.
Right. Well, I mean, and like I said, if people –
Moto Blur could still – they could still provide it as a download in the App Store. And if people want to jump down that rabbit hole, they can. But when the phone comes out of the box – I don't want any of that extra shit on it.
Well, or take the extra shit and make it widgets. I mean, widgets. I think widgets are a good way to differentiate your products.
Yeah,
you know, the HTC Sense stuff at this point is social integration with the address book, which Google should be doing anyway,
mm-hmm.
and widgets.
Because bloatware is a problem with these phones, and that's a lot of it is.
That's actually improved some. I mean, if you look at like last summer with the Galaxy S phones versus the Atrix, which just came out. Most of the bloatware apps are easily uninstallable on the Atrix, which is a big improvement. They were stored in system and you couldn't delete them on the Captivate.
Right.
On the Galaxy S phones, rather.
Yeah, that's just awful.
I mean, I think this is a good move. I think that this might actually mark the end of the Nexus line of phones, though. Because, I mean, if third parties are building phones that are core stock Android experiences and that's a compelling experience.
Yeah, what would differentiate the Nexus phone? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really interested. On the Nexus front, the AT&T version of the Nexus came out earlier this week. I'm really interested. So that means it's on AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile now. I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen with that. I mean, because that kiosk at Best Buy gets a fair amount of attention when you're in that store. You know, people walk up to it, look at it. It's a good experience for them.
Again, for me, what's interesting is that it just seems like what is the battleground for Android phone makers at this point? Like it can't be the OS, because the OS now, once they remove the ability to customize it. The OS,
well, they're not
is,
removing the ability to customize it. They're just saying if you want to customize it, you have to meet our standards.
Right.
So it has to perform well. It has to be usable.
Right.
It has to – and, of course, this is all just a rumor still at this point too.
Yeah.
I mean, I would assume that this conversation will happen at Google I.O., which is coming up very soon, and we'll know more about it.
Yeah, see, I think it's still pretty open. It's like, hey, if you want to – do whatever you want, but you can't call it an Android phone.
Right.
That's fine.
That's super open.
If you want to use our branding –
right.
Which we own.
And our apps.
And our technology, which we own.
Yeah.
Then you have to meet our standards. I don't understand what's a problem with that at all.
I don't have a problem with it either.
I absolutely agree with that move.
Let's call it Droid, because Lucas owns that.
Well, they won't call it Droid. Droid is banned too. If you
No.
Yeah.
Droid is Lucas.
I know Droid is Lucas, but it was the statement was not part of the Android branding.
You can call it – they could call it Droid.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think they could. They could totally do that.
And along with this Motorola, the rumor is Motorola is developing their own OS, phone OS,
yeah,
as
they've
well.
Been, yeah, they've been.
Which if it goes as well as it did for Mego and Symbian have gone for Nokia, then
I don't know if Motorola
can
do that. So tying into Motorola, there are actually some sales estimates for Motorola's two big products of this first quarter.
The Atrix and the Zoom?
Atrix and the Zoom. And without saying whether these are good or bad, the numbers – for the Zoom, at least, this I think Deutsche Bank made the estimate 100,000 units. Of
that's
the Zoom.
It.
Well, you say that's it, and that's obviously the first gut response.
Well, they're selling a million iPad 2s a week. Math is correct,
I think they've sold 4 million, shipped and sold, because they're all sold out. Million iPad 2s.
Yeah, and this 100,000 number is over what period?
It's been out for a month, a little over a month.
So it's small potatoes.
Small potatoes. But the things that take into consideration is that there was only the $800 model.
Right.
Right.
Only the 3G model. And there are huge things. I mean, it speaks more about the Zoom than it does for Android tablets.
I mean, I think the Zoom is more equivalent to the Nexus One or the G1. I mean, the Zoom is a developer platform, not a consumer tablet, I think.
I have seen some. Even at WonderCon, I saw a couple just out people using Zooms.
Really? The problem is this is going to become a much more crowded marketplace very quickly. We've got the new tab, which is, as Norm says, is a lot better than the initial version.
Seems
is
to
coming.
Be, at least, yeah.
And even more than just Android. I mean, you're talking about Playbook is out in 2 weeks now.
Yep.
And a touchpad is this summer, late summer.
Yeah. I'm just talking just purely even in the Android space. Yep. You know, that's going to become as congested as Android phones are very, very quickly.
Well, and then the rumors that Sony's going to have their own Honeycomb tablet this summer.
Yes. Which will play PlayStation 1 games.
Well, it's a PlayStation certified. And I guess we'll just jump to another news story. NGP might be delayed.
Because of the earthquake.
Because of the earthquake.
Wow.
Huh. So delayed to next year. I don't think it really matters all that much, because NGP really isn't like a direct competitor to – I mean in many ways I guess it is the 3DS. But people are buying 3DS. I don't think they're going to pick one or the other, like the 3DS for Nintendo games.
I think some people buy mobile consoles and some people don't.
Yeah. And if NGP is delayed to next year, I would like to see them put more effort into PlayStation Certified, making that experience actually good.
Well, and the other thing, if NGP is delayed till next year, it could actually be a really good thing for the platform, because we could end up seeing much better launch games than we would see otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
an
extra 6 or 8 months gives developers a lot more time. Yeah. And I mean, looking at the 3DS launch lineup, when the best game on the platform is Space Raiders
and Street Fighter 4
or Street Fighter 4, I mean, it's grim.
Yeah,
it's grim.
You and really Best Buy launch with two or three, at least three like killer apps.
Also, I mean,
you just
more
want
time
one
to save up.
Yeah, you just want to. Like, the DS launched with fucking Mario 64. I mean, that was an old-ass game at that point, but it's
really?
a classic.
Did
DS
launched with, Super Mario?
Super Mario.
Mario
64.
Okay, yeah, Mario 64.
No, no.
And
the N64 game.
And, like, the Metroid demo.
The Metroid Hunters demo it came with, but you had to buy Mario 64.
Right.
And then there were a couple of other kind of tech demo games, like XXXY, Touch the Magic, and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, at least they had Mario 64.
PSP had a really good launch line.
Well, it had Lumines.
Lumines had a Ridge Racer, which I loved.
Well, DS has Ridge Racer too. 3DS has Ridge Racer as well.
Ridge Racer on PSP was awesome.
But I mean, the point is, more time to get better games is not a bad thing for NGP.
Mm-hmm.
Other stuff that's happening, rumors, announcement, Sandy Bridge M14X.
Yeah, and where I think like a Chinese website actually had photos, and they actually had one in hand, so would not be surprised if that was we announced soon. Running Sandy Bridge on M14, so mid-size gaming laptop.
That's about a 4-pounder, right?
I never have been sold on gaming laptops that are in the 14 to 17 inch size, especially the big 17 ones. Like they are full at 17. I guess you're a desktop replacement.
Yeah, I mean that's a real computer at that point.
It's a real computer. It's not going to be very portable. But I've been more interested in like the 11 to 13 inch.
Do you guys think the 14 and 15 inch laptops are going to get squeezed out as 13 inch laptops get more capable? Or do you think people are willing to carry an extra pound or two for more screen?
Well, it depends what you're using it for. Well, I mean,
so you say a pound for more screen and for weight. They can go 14 by just increasing the screen, but they don't have to add more in terms of the
well, you're not going to have a sub 3-pound 14-inch notebook.
I don't understand the point of these big powerhouse 5-pound gaming laptops.
Well, 7-pound usually is closer to
it. Well, okay, so when you see like these big Alienware, huge laptop things. I mean, it's very impressive, but at that point, if it's a desktop replacement, why not just have a desktop? Because it's so heavy. I mean, it's not like something you're just going to be walking around with. Well, I mean, that's like a suitcase.
People who drive, like people who work in labs, and people who edit video. I mean, it's the same reason why there's a 17-inch MacBook Pro. They can actually do everything you can on a desktop with it.
Well, almost.
But you can take it almost.
Yeah.
And then you can still take it on trips or take it back to the office, to home, and it's a mobile.
But I don't really want to play Crysis 2 on a 17-inch screen.
Well, but if you're a dude who drives from point to point, has a job where you spend 2 weeks a month in a car and you're spending nights in hotel rooms and you play WoW or
I suppose
Rift or some online game or Team Fortress even.
Yeah.
Then, or Call of Duty or any number of – I mean everything runs on these laptops at this point.
Yeah.
I mean there's no reason you couldn't take that game and then you at least have something to play in the hotel room assuming you have decent internet.
Right.
So yeah, that seems like it's definitely a real thing. Galaxy S2 seems like it might be getting an upgrade. Rumor poster on Engadget is
–
dual core 1.2 gigahertz, right? Mm-hmm. And then delayed until May or June, though. Along with that good news comes a little bad. So, kind of interesting. The iPhone dev team released an untethered iOS 4.3.1 jailbreak.
Pretty big news. Finally.
That's huge news. Yeah,
4.3.1 untethered for everything except the iPad 2.
Is this the first iPhone 4 untethered jailbreak?
I'm not exactly sure.
I mean, there may have been one for 4.0. But I haven't – since I started looking at jailbreaking again, there hasn't been an untethered jailbreak for iPhone. That's huge news because that means untethered just means if you haven't already jailbroken your – it means that you can reboot the phone without having to connect it to a computer and re-jailbreak it every time you want to restart the phone, which is huge news, good news. So that's out. That's at the normal places. The red snow is what you want. The only thing you can't do right now is unlock baseband. So if you are trying to use your – AT&T iPhone on T-Mobile or something similar to that, then that won't work yet. So don't jailbreak yet if you are not using AT&T or your authorized carrier.
Do you think it's weird that T-Mobile is still running these ads bashing AT&T?
I mean, they'll go away as soon as they've already paid for them.
Yeah. Right? I guess.
I mean, you write the check. I bet the people that are at T-Mobile and are about to get acquired by AT&T probably also aren't real stoked about it because – they're probably not going to have jobs for much longer.
I mean, they paid for the space, but they could always throw up another ad.
It takes a while to make a new ad.
Just throw up on the old ones.
Just, hey guys, we have the T-Mobile G1. It's the first Android phone. You can buy it today.
Exactly. Why not?
Throw up an ad for a 2-year-old phone. Okay. I mean, I guess that sounds good. XBMC remote. This is big news. Kind of for a small community of people.
Well, it's not actually okay. So yes, I think. This is a remote that was kind of
they've been talking about it for a long time.
It was kind of showed at CES, but no one picked up on it. And then Motorola makes it. And now one of the engineers who works on XBMC, he's started a firm where he works with a firm that is making this remote.
It's like a design and manufacturing firm, right?
Something like that. So it's actually not officially released by the XBMC team.
But it's designed to work with XBMC. It's
designed ideally to work with XBMC.
And I assume that means it'll also work with Plex and Boxy since they're based on XBMC, right?
I think so. So it comes with a dongle and has IR built in so you can use to control their stuff.
But it's a RF remote when you're working with the XBMC box? Yeah. Okay.
So it's and it's a small, you know, micro dongle receiver. And
it looks kind of like the Boxy remote, but
does,
better.
A little bit boxier, like not as well, not as like, not as designed, not as European,
but also more functional than the Boxy.
Looks more functional.
Remote. Yeah.
All we have are renders right now, but hopefully we'll get a unit in closer when it launches. It's available for pre-order right now. I think it's like $70, $60 or $70, and it's going to come out in June.
Cool. Mozilla Firefox 4, of course, came out last week. We've talked about that already, but. Day before yesterday, Mozilla released a extension speed list of shame. So, you know, you install a bunch of extensions in Firefox and or add-ons, I guess they call them now. And of course, some of them are good performers. Some of them are kind of dogs. And they released the top 10 slowest extensions.
The things that slow down your browser?
The things that slow down the launch of the browser more than anything else. And it's like you'd expect it to be well, first off, they only pulled from the top 100 extensions, which means that they got like the thick part of the curve. You know, the ones that most people are going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really an interesting list because it's some stuff that I wouldn't have expected.
Okay.
So
what are the main offenders?
The number one is Fox Lingo, which is a translator. I can kind of see that. That's a useful thing. You might actually keep that on. The number two is one that's loved by web developers everywhere. Firebug, you know, basically that lets you go in and inspect, kind of see how the pages render and all sorts of, you know, other web developer-y stuff. So if you have a bug on your page, you can really, really get down and dirty and see like exactly what the browser is doing with the code that you hand it.
You can also, I guess, if you're interested in how competitors are doing their pages, you can go in and like reverse engineer their tricks.
Well, it's really neat because it lets you load up the style sheet and then it shows you which box it draws boxes around the divs on the page as they're rendered. So, okay. I mean, it's a really useful thing if you want to figure out how web code in general works.
All right,
but
not really
kind of a dog.
Not really something for everyday users, though.
I mean, it's good if you want to grab video or media files or stuff like that that are embedded too. So anyway, there's a weather thing that I've never heard of before. The Foxy Tunes, the MP3 player that's built into your browser, unsurprisingly, is slow.
Mm-hmm.
Video download helper, the thing that lets you download Flash videos from YouTube or Vimeo or any number of other sites.
Right.
Fastest Fox, ironically, which is supposed to make you browse faster. I think it does some pre-caching and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Unclear whether that actually does anything at all, but I assume it does. It seems to be popular. And then the other one is Xmark Sync, which is the bookmark syncing utility, which I know a lot of people use. And we've even talked about it on the site before.
I know that one of the reasons why people love Firefox is because of all the extensions and customization you can do. It's actually one of the reasons why I stopped using it.
It's just too much.
There's too much of it out there. And I would find that occasionally things would install themselves without asking. And I got to a point where my Firefox would crash on launch every time because of an extension that had
gone sideways,
that had wormed its way into my browser without me even. I think it was like a shitty Yahoo fucking toolbar or some bullshit.
Oh, it was a
like
plugin
that.
Then, not an extension.
Well, whatever it was, it was a thing that I couldn't even use Firefox anymore.
Yeah,
that was when I moved to Chrome.
Well, so I mean, I definitely feel that pain. The thing that annoyed me with Firefox and what made me switch from 3.6 is. It eventually got to the point with probably 8 extensions installed, including like Grease Monkey and Firebug and a Gmail notifier and a couple other things, that every time I launched Firefox, I got the, hey, your extensions are out of date. Do you want to update
them?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't want to have out-of-date extensions.
Well, don't you have like 86 apps on your iPad that haven't been updated?
And I don't want notifications that my extensions are out of date. Somehow.
I have 21 out-of-date iPad apps right now.
So that doesn't bother you, but Firefox extensions
Well, I got like 1,500 iPad apps on here probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No one has 1,500 iPad apps.
I have a lot of iPad apps.
I have 81 on this iPad.
Why don't you update your apps?
Because I love the update all button, and you know, for a while it was gone, and it came back.
Yeah.
And I think it's at a point where if I click update all, it doesn't
– So just click it and leave it and come back later.
122 total installed.
That's what I'm saying.
And so less than
– Here's the problem. Fifth. If you click update all, I have so many apps that need like get the warning that pops up every time I update it.
The age restriction.
The age restriction warning or some other needs, you know, different pop-ups that you can't just – you have to actually monitor it.
It would be nice. It would be nice to be able to just say, hey, I'm 20 years old. Fucking leave me alone.
So what you're saying is – yeah, there should be like a yes to all.
Yeah.
But so what you're saying is you've now dug a hole so deep you can't ever get out of it?
That's right. I got to do individually the apps I want to really use. or just starting from the slate?
I mean, this is another thing that I talked about in the iPad review. We're getting a little off topic here, but this is worth talking about. The app maintenance, syncing, installation process is a nightmare. I mean, I know we have probably more apps than anybody else, than normal people, because we do a lot of downloads and testing, and we do the video every week with 5 or 6 apps, so they add up pretty quickly. However, right now I sync my phone, my iPad, my wife's phone, my wife's iPad to one computer. And that means that anything that she buys ends up on her, my iPad and iPhone, her iPhone. I mean, everything that any of us buys ends up on all the devices.
You have a shared account.
We have a shared account.
Okay.
And it is an incredible pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a problem of my own making. I realize that I've made the mistake, but at this point, it's too late to go back. There's no turning back. And I mean, you look in the folder on iTunes, and there's 4 versions of some of the stuff for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
There's no easy way to get rid of all the duplicates. There's no easy way to say, hey, these are the apps that I want to sync to this thing, other than to scroll through the list individually and pick each one.
Right.
And you can't even pick – like you can sort by whether they are iPhone, iPad apps, iPhone, iPad-only apps, or iPhone-only apps. But you can't sort by like what device they're purchased on. It's just a really, really – it's a very un-Apple-y experience.
Yeah, I mean, my situation isn't as complicated as yours, but like, I don't let apps pile up. Once I decide that I don't like an app or I've got no use for it anymore, I'll just delete it. And I think 2 pages of apps in my iPad, because they're only the ones that I use regularly. I have no interest in scrolling through 8 pages of apps. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have 3 pages because I use folders. But the larger problem is like why is there no option that says, I never ever want to put iPhone apps on my iPad.
That would be a good checkbox.
Right? I mean, like 90% of the iPhone-only apps I'm never ever going to use.
Right.
Only very rarely, like games like Shibuya or Tiny Wings that work well blown up on
like
iPad.
Facebook, which and is only the
iPad. I don't have Facebook installed on my iPad. I use a website. Actually, I just stopped using Facebook, and that solved that problem much, much better than anything else I've done. So yeah, I mean, it's a dopey – the sync thing – Apple has got to fucking fix that, because it is a problem that is holding them back. And we haven't even talked about the idiocy of having to plug in the tablet to the PC mm-hmm. the first time you use mm-hmm. it, which has been talked about to death. Anyway, the Mozilla extension shameless, I thought that was interesting. Here's a good story on from Ars Technica. A group did a study with a bunch of college students from around the world, and they disconnected them from the internet for 24 hours.
That's just inhuman.
I thought so too.
However, that's cruel and unusual.
Well, this conversation started because, I mean, do you feel like internet addiction is a legitimate medical problem?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I think I suffer from it.
As doctors.
Yes.
As medical professionals.
Information addiction, yes.
You feel like information overload, anxiety when you get with – when was the last time either of you were connected from the internet for more than 24
Disconnected?
Hours? Disconnected.
For 24 hours?
More than.
I honestly – well, the thing is now once the phone becomes a thing – Probably before the age of the internet phone.
It was probably the last time I was probably disconnected for more than 24 hours was when I was in a country that did not have an international data plan agreement with AT&T. So like probably honeymoon in 2005.
A lot of people disagree because, I mean, it's psychological.
You're psychological. That's what she said.
Boy Scout camp and when I was like 16 years old probably. And even then I would weasel ways. I would go to the like –
You go to the infirmary.
Like you go to like the one payphone, and I would call my friends and ask them to tell me what's up in Blues News. Tell me what happened in Blues News today.
Now, do you remember last week when we went to lunch and it was quite late and you were really hungry? And I offered you money to not eat for 24 hours.
Oh, well, we actually didn't talk about this. No one knows about this.
So, well, we can get into it in more detail, okay. But my question would be what do you think you could survive more easily without internet or food
internet,
for 24
internet,
hours?
Internet, no doubt.
Really?
No doubt, yeah. Yeah.
Because food is a physical craving.
I can always get
internet
a book.
Is a psychological craving.
Well, yes, but they can both be equally bad.
I'm going to go – like basically no internet for 24 hours for me is a problem entertaining myself. So I would just go to the library and get a book.
Okay.
Well, it depends on what – okay. Also, it depends on what time of year it is. If it was – happened June 9th, you know, WWDC week, right?
Yeah, Norm's head is going to explode.
No, I'm just on any given random day.
That's the thing with internet. There are certain
days, no email,
higher value than other days.
Well, so the responses to this survey to this study were interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the kids said they had anxiety. A lot of people. I'm trying to find the quotes. One kid from the U.S. said she was itching like a crackhead. A Lebanese student simply said the whole experience was sickening. And a student from Argentina said he felt dead without media. So now the question is, like, I couldn't do any – there's no electronic device in my house at this point that's not connected to the internet in some way, shape,
right,
or form.
Right.
The game consoles are. The DVR is. The computers all are. The phone. The tablet.
The only thing is like your kitchen.
Well, yeah, I could go make some cookies.
There used to be a fairly straightforward delineation. You know, you would have internet in your home, but when you walked out of the house, you're away from the internet.
But now
everyone has a smartphone. You are used to having that information at your and my girlfriend quite rightly gives me grief all the time for, you know, I'm walking around the supermarket checking my Twitter, or I'm checking my reading my iPad while I'm eating my dinner.
You become more
disengaged.
Are you going to ignore people in the real world?
You guys are monsters. I make my grocery list on the iPhone, so I'm always walking around with the phone up here in the grocery store.
Well, but okay, so you're using it for an application that is useful to what you're doing
now. But I'm afraid people are going to think I'm like you.
Well, they do think that. They don't know what you're doing.
I know. I want to have a T-shirt that says I'm just browsing my grocery list.
That's probably the one T-shirt you don't have.
With a digital message where I can type something on my phone.
But you know,
what pops on my T-shirt.
That's next.
We've seen stories, in the legitimate press about how this is bad for families. You've got the family sitting around eating dinner, and they're all staring at their own individual screens. People aren't communicating anymore.
Well, so
they're texting each other.
Mutual friend of ours tweeted a long time ago something that I thought was clever. Johnny Bent said, I know who my best friends are because I don't know what kind of phone they have.
Yeah. Okay.
So never has he been in a situation where the first thing you do when you sit down with that person, and I'm sure he doesn't know anybody he doesn't know what kind of phone they have.
Right.
But I make a conscious effort. If I'm in the car with somebody, I don't pick up the phone if it rings. You know, I shunt it off to voicemail unless it's something dangerously important, right?
Yeah.
I'm spending real world time with somebody who's a friend of mine.
You know, that was a problem even before the information age. The idea that if I, for example, am in a store or having a conversation with someone, the fact that the phone rings somehow takes immediate precedence over the fact that I'm actually here talking to you. That's
right.
The priority of that is very bad.
It's very offensive.
But the other person took the effort to dial your number.
Fuck them, man. They're not
waiting. I took the effort to get in a car and come to your fucking store.
You happen to be there.
Why aren't you letting the phone ring and saying to that guy, I actually have a real customer here. You can call back later. Why does it have to be? I have to wait because just decided to call.
You're talking about the person behind the counter.
Yes.
I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, so I was at GameStop the other day, and that actually happened. The phone rang. He said, hey, I'm sorry, I have to take this. He said, there's another customer. He picked up the phone. Thank you for calling GameStop. Would you like to trade in some games or some similar bullshit? And then he said, can you hold, please? There's another customer ahead of you in line.
Right.
Which is fantastic.
Okay.
I thought that was exactly the
that's
way that should
that's
be
the right way to do it.
Yeah, because they're desperate. They don't want to lose that call. That call is a potential sale.
You're already, but I may walk out.
I've done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is, I feel like if somebody's in the real world with you, unless it's something like, you know, your wife is about to have a baby, Jack Bauer needs a connection to a new port, let it go to voicemail. It'll wait. It's nothing, you know, unless you know it's an important call. But never, ever just pick up the phone mid-conversation with somebody else and say, oh, hey, what's going on, Jim?
I will reiterate. I take my phone out of my pocket because it is uncomfortable when I sit down and the phone.
Well, that's a whole different thing. That's okay.
Yes.
You need a jacket for that.
Yeah.
Or like an under-shoulder sling for the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when a cop sits down, he takes the gun holster and you know, puts it on.
No, they don't. Never ever seen that.
In Westerns, you know. When you have the belt, you take the belt off and you put the gun on the countertop.
Never ever seen that.
What?
Wyatt Earp never takes his gun out of his fucking holster until somebody's going to die.
It's uncomfortable. It's unwieldy.
Real men don't care about pocket comfort, Norm.
The only thing I've learned about that from watching cop TV shows is the only time a cop ever takes his gun out and puts it away is when he's about to give a perp a beating.
Right.
No. It's not the gun. It's the entire holster. Like in the Western.
Right, because it's not comfortable to sit down
with. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm making the same point.
But I need to find ways to wean myself off this kind of habitual internet checking.
Should we do the challenge?
I think we should do a day. I think we should do a day with no internet.
24 hours?
Is it going to be like the contest?
I think you mean how long can we go?
Yeah.
How will we tell each other how we're doing?
I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. I would definitely be the Kramer of this scenario.
It ended best for him.
Yeah, he won.
Instead of instead of the naked woman across the street, there'll be some kind of surprise Steve Jobs event, and I'll be like, I'll be back in 5 minutes. Yeah. And I'll come back. I'm out.
Yeah. So how would we monitor that? Is that honor system?
You have, well, they did the honor. You'd have to do honor system.
I would trust Costanza with the honor system.
The problem is we all actually need it.
No. Well,
we all actually use this for work.
Sunday, there's
you'd
no...
have to do a week. Could you do a weekend?
I mean, it would have to be a Sunday or Saturday. God. We'd have like to start on a Friday after work.
Someone have to have like a check to make sure no one was on instant message, and you could check.
No,
the
honor,
Gmail.
No, you just do honor system. We all trust
and
each other.
You could check the because Google tracks IPs from whenever you log into Gmail.
No, but we don't need any
well,
of that.
Well, we could get a disinterested third party like Leah to. I mean, I trust her not to give you a benefit.
Yeah, but how is she tracking? How are you guys being tracked?
At the end of the
oh, so I have contest. To be watched, but you two don't.
I don't trust Norm either. He
so,
loves
what,
to
like,
win.
What would the parameters would be?
No honor.
What, for, the, say from 6 p.m. Friday.
It's like Rosh Hashanah
to 9 a.m.
Right.
Monday.
Right. We fast. We have an internet fast.
Is it just now? Internet? Can I play single player games? Or is it?
Yeah.
Media?
So, presumably, Xbox Live would be out, right?
I think anything connected to the internet is verboten.
Okay.
I think we're literally talking about we're back to the Stone Age, man.
So no Netflix.
No Netflix. No Xbox, no Apple TV, no PC, no phone, no iPad, no Kindle.
Well, no, hold on.
Yeah.
Can I read things I've already downloaded?
Maybe.
No, see, it needs
I
to
think
be
it has
free.
To be a paper book.
Yeah.
Well, no, so hold on. What are the parameters here? Are we saying no...
We live in a
are
world
we saying
with
no technology?
Internet. Yeah, I saw this movie called The Book of Eli about a world that a post-apocalyptic world where they didn't have a digital information superhighway anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that.
He still had an iPod.
Well, okay, so if you have a classic iPod that doesn't connect to the internet, that's
you,
fine.
You got to carry
iPod
a car battery
Touch
with
would
you.
Be verboten.
But wait, so why can't I use it in airplane mode?
Because it's too dangerous. It's
what's
too close.
Dangerous about it?
It's too you could but cache why the internet. You could download 12 gigs of Wikipedia and just start reading Wikipedia.
Yeah. So like between now and Friday, all our bandwidth spikes. Right. We download everything we possibly can.
Right. I don't want to do it.
Ration new data.
My wife's out of town this weekend. There's no chance I'm doing it this weekend. This is a media frenzy this weekend.
Well, yeah, but why
I'm
not?
I'm playing video games and sitting in my underwear all weekend.
Okay.
But maybe next weekend.
All right.
See, the hardest part wouldn't be if you had no if you're on a camping trip or if you legitimately had no way to access the internet, because then you have no choice. And while it would still suck.
Maybe we just come here. Think about it. What
are you really missing? Like I check my email. Checking email now for me has just become a habitual thing.
I just do it in the morning. I don't even check email.
I've checked email but 25 times since this podcast started.
Right. And I've probably done the same. But the reality – and that's mostly because this is very boring. But,
I'm sitting right here, man.
No, but the real point is on a weekend, I get very few emails, if any, that are actually relevant to me because my only real – relevant emails are work-related ones.
Right.
Facebook, Twitter, that's just entertainment. That's not shit I need to know.
Right.
The news, I like to stay informed, but I can get that from TV. Like, what am I
really...
Well,
except for my TV is internet connected, so I can't do that.
Well, just don't use the internet features.
But TiVo pulls the fucking guide data from the internet.
Oh, well, you see, I don't do that.
Doesn't Comcast pull the guide information from the internet?
No, I don't have it. My cable box doesn't have a Ethernet cable going into it. It just has a coaxial cable. So technically, I'm okay.
Too far in the future.
So I could watch TV.
I think what we need to do to make this happen is to bring some dome tents into the basement, camp out in the basement at the office here where we can watch each other constantly.
I agree.
That's going to end up like the thing where we end up eating each other or something.
Well, only if you have a demon inside you.
But to be honest with you, that's the only – because as much as you say the honor system, I don't really trust anyone.
I don't
in
trust
this
Norm.
I really don't trust Norm.
Yeah, Norm is –
I trust you because I think you're generally fairly disciplined about this stuff. Norm – if
I will win.
Norm will be watching StarCraft replays 30 minutes after we
Norm
start.
Norm is checking his iPad right now. Like he cannot leave it alone. He's worse than me. So yeah. I think you would have to – but the thing is – Once you control it like that, once you actually take the devices away and say lock people in a room, then it's
what
are we really testing? How you do without the internet or how strong your discipline is? Because if you control it, then discipline's not the issue because you're taking that out of the
hands
of the
user. Well,
there's
still internet in the office. We have Wi-Fi here.
In the contest, they didn't lock themselves up. They
just went living their lives.
They just had to exercise discipline.
Well, and the other thing is like if I got Gina to print my emails for me. Can I do that?
No.
So then I don't miss important emails?
No.
No.
No. No. That's cheating.
Well, what if we go past Sunday?
What do you mean?
What if we make it through the weekend and we reach Monday morning, we need email for work? Do we put an out of office that says, hey, we're doing something dumb for science?
Because I think the parameters of the experiment are just through the weekend. Once Monday rolls around, yeah. I actually need to check my email for work.
It shouldn't even be like a set time. It should be sunrise.
Dawn.
Rosh Hashan.
Dawn on Monday is when so you're standing at the beach staring.
Daybreak.
When the sun comes up, then you
should morning.
Are you the master? Are you the master of your IP domain?
Yeah. I'm the master of my domain.
Are you the master of your domain name?
I am the master of my domain name. I have multiple domain names.
I think that you would have the easiest time. I think I would struggle, but I would find other ways to distract myself. I think Norm would.
I would kill myself.
Lord of the fucking. It'd be like Piggy in Lord of the Flies. He couldn't.
I think Norm would actually. Like, remember that Star Trek episode where they de-evolve?
Yeah.
I think Norm would actually revert to some kind of feral.
You think by 9 o'clock on Friday night he'd be banging rocks together?
Yeah, he'd be like Wolf Boy or something. You'd have the animal control would have to go in and get him.
Well, there's remember that South Park episode where I don't know if you've seen this one where they don't have internet and they have to travel west because they hear there's internet out there.
I haven't seen that. That sounds good though.
It's so good. Okay, next
South Park watching day.
I think we couldn't watch that if we were playing the game.
What if we had DVDs?
I could go to the store and buy a DVD.
Yeah, that counts.
I just can't
dial
it
from Amazon.
Yep.
And you couldn't use it in your PS3. You'd have to use it in an old school DVD player.
I can play single player games offline, right? As long as I don't connect onto Xbox Live.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing is, I think if we camp out in the office, we have hundreds and hundreds of comic books with which to entertain ourselves. And yes. We could bring board games.
Yeah. Then I think it's not as interesting though, because then I think the whole point is to live your normal life as you would live it. Maybe without the internet, not create special circumstances where you go and live in a cave.
Maybe we could hire one of Norm's roommates to watch him, to monitor.
I don't trust that. He would pay them off.
No, I know his roommates. Evan is an upfront stand-up.
Norm will find a way. Norm will find a way.
My question is, though, given that Norm is so thrilled with the idea of winning.
Yes.
Would that actually take him through to the other side? Would he succeed because of that?
I mean, ultimately, 72 hours of a weekend isn't that much of a sacrifice.
As much as he would hate being without the internet for 3 days, he would hate the idea of failing and losing even more.
Yeah.
I think that would push him through.
Well, the thing that worries me is that I'd get up on Sunday morning, and I'd be like walking out, and I'd just pick up the iPad out of habit and be like, oh, fuck.
That's the other thing. It's like like being given an egg, you know, to carry around for a week. Like, you're going to fuck up sooner or later.
Also, I'd have to buy a clock because I don't have an alarm clock anymore.
Buy a wristwatch.
Fuck that, dude. I'm not old. Sorry, Gary. You're wearing a wristwatch.
I wear
a
wristwatch.
Norm, do you wear a wristwatch?
No.
I have to say I did have wristwatch envy this Christmas when I saw the Speedmaster.
Oh, yeah. That's some good stuff.
I'll get an Omega.
Yeah.
So I think the whole dome tent thing, while interesting.
Yeah.
I think the whole point is like you don't change anything other than you simply
live your life.
You got to do it. I could do it.
I could do it.
I would. I think I would, if Chan,
some benefit at the end.
Chan, would you swear on StarCraft?
I only do it if there was some.
You will forsake StarCraft if you lie.
Is there some type of prize? And I get a ribbon?
I'll give you a ribbon. Yeah.
Yeah, you get a medal.
It'll say number one winner.
Will you guys lose if I win?
No. We all win.
There is the possibility that we could lose.
Yeah, if everybody makes it, we all get honorable mentions.
Nope. Then
if two people make it, we get a first place.
The only way for it to be a zero-sum game is if it's just about you and we're betting against you. This I better.
I'm not doing that because I don't trust him if we're betting against him. If we're not involved in the contest.
Yes, but if it's just about him, then he can be monitored.
This is the longest tangent we've ever gone on, by the way.
But this is interesting, though. This way he can be monitored.
Oh, so you're saying we just watch Twitter and I am? But he's still going to go on YouTube.
He would find ways to game that. He needs to be supervised.
He's just not going to log in.
He needs supervision.
Hmm. If we put nanny software on his computer and watch his keystrokes, take away the iPad,
He would go to an internet cafe. He would find a way. Nature finds a way.
Life will find a way. Huh.
He would have to be placed under constant supervision.
Skin. I mean, he can take shifts.
He could live a normal. Yeah, he could live a normal life, but he would have to be chaperoned at all times. I mean, I don't trust him.
You know, when we talk about this like it's nothing, but I'm trying to visualize like a weekend without
what you would do.
The computer.
You would just get really, really drunk.
It would be the longest weekend ever.
Can't you just watch loads of TV?
No, I would. I would think TV. You couldn't do TV.
Why can't you do TV? TV's not the internet.
I don't think I could watch TV without something to distract me from the boring inanity of TV.
But watch, you know, your favorite movies on Blu-ray.
Well, you could do that.
My attention span is too
except for the Blu-ray players are all internet connected because they have to be to get firmware updates.
Mm.
I'll go on like a bike ride.
There right. you go.
I would go on a massive bender, just 72 hours of shit face.
The point is, I think you could get through it, but the question is how nervous damaged. Or anxious or like would you be really jittery by the end of it?
The best thing is then other people around you who know you're, you know, testing yourself for this.
We'll taunt you.
We'll taunt. Like, did you see that thing?
Oh my God! You can't believe what they just announced.
This YouTube video. Did you see that thing on Reddit?
Did you see the cats?
But the thing is, you wouldn't be seeing that stuff. How's that going to be coming at you?
Well, he lives in a room full of people that will still have the internet.
So they would have to be trying to give you shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we could actually pay them more to taunt him harder.
Yes.
I like this idea.
Oh, no.
The worst thing is, hey Norm, can you order a pizza for us? Yeah, hold on, let me look up. Oh fuck,
I don't have a rotary phone. Like if I,
you don't need a rotary phone. You just need a touch tone.
I don't know what that is.
Ring, ring, ring. Hey Mabel, can you connect me to Extreme Pizza?
Ahoy, ahoy, ahoy. If my phone. The worst part is
this is the best bad idea we've ever had.
If you can't use your iPhone or can't use your smartphone,
yeah,
but the phone still is on. So just sitting on your table upside down and you hear it buzzing. Like every time you get a new email, it buzzes. That's the worst.
Do you think this is like I think we have to do that. Do you think this is like – you know when they flew that Voyager airplane around the world, they had special landing gear that every time the wheels revolved, it said. So if they had cheated and landed in South America someplace, then the wheels would have more distance on them than they did when they took off.
Right.
You think we could do something like that for Norm's phone? Like look at his data usage or something like that?
No, I think what you do is just take his phone away.
No. I think it has to be there.
The phone is there.
Yeah.
I know that it's
turn on email notifications. Turn on Twitter notifications.
Like, notifications are coming. Like if I picked up the phone, I would have 50 just new emails.
Just think messages. That just kind of seems like unduly bad. Like it should just be about turning the device off.
Hey, look, I have almost 20,000 followers on Twitter. You have what, like 6 or 7? We could get 27,000 people to send Norm at messages the entire time he's offline. The phone would just be constantly buzzing. Buzz, buzz, buzz,
and
buzz.
I wouldn't know
buzz,
if it was buzz, a buzz, buzz, buzz. Twitter message or a
buzz,
email.
Buzz, buzz, buzz. Buzz, 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 buzz.
Yeah,
we should
just constantly be emailing and texting him.
Yeah, never, nonstop.
That would be incredibly hard to, like, if the phone was sitting there, if the phone is in my pocket and I knew and it buzzed, I can't help but pick it up and check what it is. I cannot help it.
This is going to be one of those things like we're like in an old Tex Avery cartoon where like Evan comes downstairs and like Norm's staring. He's like, why are you looking at me like that? And his head turns into a big internet, like a big roast chicken, whatever the internet version of that is.
Okay. We've talked about this enough. I think this is a next weekend project. Let's do it.
I think it's definitely
it.
Something we should explore further.
Yes. We need to document it though. We need to have video there.
Oh, of course.
Which is going to be awful for whoever. Maybe you just give Norm a flip and have him do video diaries.
Norm's
going to,
within 24 hours, Norm's going to look like some paranormal lost South Pole explorer.
Well, it's Heart of Darkness, right?
I'm going out now. I may be sometime.
Yeah, exactly.
Never to return.
And next thing you know, he's driving up the Mekong Delta with a
Norm went upriver.
Right. I don't remember. Oh, yeah. So anyway, people felt anxiety. There's conflict whether internet addiction is a real psychological disorder or something else.
I think being addicted to video games is. I mean, if it's a behavior that you don't.
Didn't you go and talk to Colonel Grossman about video? No, that was violence.
That was about violence. Games.
Yeah,
which I have a different opinion on. But I think addiction. I think anything that that creates a compulsive behavior that you can't control.
That's true.
I was addicted to Warcraft for a long time. I had to quit that the same way I quit drinking.
Yeah, cold turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not because necessarily of the game. It's also, you know, your type of personality too.
Well, who just have I have an addictive – I think I have an addictive personality.
Yeah, I have compulsion problems. The thing that happened to me is with WoW and EverQuest before that was I realized eventually that I wasn't playing the game to have fun. I was playing the game because that was what I did every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you see that really interesting article about sunk cost recently and this is why Zynga makes so much money?
No.
Is that your brain associates with loss more than it does with gain. So one of the reasons why you keep playing Farmville is just because you've sunk so much time into it. That your brain isn't psychologically willing to let it go.
The act of spending time makes you more likely to spend time.
Yes.
Yeah.
You become invested.
Sense.
And it's like, well, with my Warcraft character, I've already got a level 80 something character
yeah.
that, you know, I have to keep that going. Otherwise I feel like if you stop, you feel like all the effort you've put in is suddenly wasted because you're no longer sustaining it.
Well, it's funny because the thing that fixed that for EverQuest for me, because I had a couple of level 60 characters in EverQuest, 70 characters, whatever it was at the time. And when they started adding those ability points, you know, the things – so basically once you reach the level cap, then you could go do they were called AA points, but I don't remember what they were. But basically they were you'd get additional powers that were kind of like spells, but they may make you run a little bit faster or hit a little bit harder or tank a little better or something like that. And the grind for those was an order of magnitude more brutal than the level grind had been. So as somebody who only had 20 or 30 hours a week to play this game, all of a sudden I was getting wildly outpaced by my clanmates, and that made the game no longer interesting for me. So that was what broke it for me. When they added all those deep progressions in WoW for PvP or that kind of stuff, they did the same thing.
And WoW now requires you to level up so not just your level, but your skills and your equipment and your different
professions. Well, and then there's all the faction stuff.
There's so much. Yeah. You can never stay ahead of all those curves. And after a while, I fell far enough behind that I didn't care anymore. But while you're in that sweet spot, you're in that zone.
Yeah.
That whole idea of
it's positive feedback.
The whole idea of the sunk cost. And like I said, the way that your brain cares more about loss, one of the analogies used was like if you play poker, you remember the astounding bad beats you took far better than the great hands that you won.
Well, oh, no doubt. Well, that's the reason that people chase when they shouldn't too in poker. You're playing Texas Hold'em, and you have a three card. You need two cards to make the hand you want.
Yes,
you get one on the turn. You're more than likely going to stay in because it worked out the first time. Why not go for a second one? Human psychology on that stuff.
It is a fallacy. And again, I don't remember the article, but there were some fascinating examples of how people were presented with the exact same situation, but it was presented to them in different ways that made you look at it a different way.
Yeah.
And you would come up with different.
Oh, this is a bad deal.
Yeah, you would think it was a bad deal, even though it's actually logically the exact same as the other deal. But because the first deal kind of looks more like you're losing something, your brain doesn't like it as much.
Yeah. Yeah. I read that too. It was in The Economist or something, right? Mm. Anyway.
And Zynga's entire $1 billion business model is based on that psychology. Well,
yeah. I mean, but people should know that. People should be aware of that. And I think
that's why I don't play those bullshit games.
Well, right. I mean, that's exactly the reason you don't play those games.
So, I mean, is Zynga really any better than a crack dealer?
Well, there's no physical harm from playing Zynga games.
I guess that's true.
I mean, you don't get – there's no withdrawal effects.
Right, but you could make the argument that the harm to –
Well, crack withdrawal
your relationships
will kill you.
And your life in general.
Yeah, but I mean, that's arbitrary. Crack withdrawal is a physical thing that can actually kill you.
There are documented stories though of families and marriages that have been destroyed by addictive video games.
There's documented stories of everything being destroyed by people enjoying racing cars too much, so he goes to the track too often.
What it comes down to in the end? Personal responsibility.
Yeah, you got to take responsibility for your actions. I agree.
Myself.
A couple more small stories. Spotify has announced a streaming box. It's kind of cool. I like this because Spotify is only available in the Europe right now, which is a bummer. Although they did do a moderately funny April Fool's story about fucking over all of their existing customers in exchange for entering the U.S. market. I'd be okay with that. The Euros felt that was funny, but I mean, I laughed. Spotify box basically is a kind of retro styled looking thing. It's kind of neat looking. I think it's cool. But the neat thing about it is there's a few RFID tags that come with it, and you can program each tag to be associated with a specific playlist or song. So loading up your favorite music, just wave the tag at it.
I like when they're old, when new technology is kind of melded and meshed with old technology.
Yeah.
And just for clever, for design purposes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's cool. Samsung drops the price on its 3D glasses. This is good news for anybody with Samsung TV. So
they're also bundling.
Yeah, bundling two pairs of glasses with the sets now. And
what I'm not sure is exactly which models they are. I know they're not the really old battery models. I think they're still the USB ones, but I don't think that they are the actual.
They're not the new Bluetooth ones.
New
though.
Super light ones that we saw at CES.
And they're $50 each now instead of $100, which is good if you want
that. They have to do that because the passive TVs from LG and Panasonic are coming out, and those are like $10 for a pair of glasses.
So the upshot is if you haven't bought glasses for your 3D TV yet and you want them, then don't wait because they're going to get cheaper.
For Samsung.
Yeah. Well, I think for everybody, really. I mean, Panasonic, all the other active glasses manufacturers are going to have to drop prices to compete with the passive glasses.
I hope so.
Netflix, Mad Men, seasons 1 through 4.
Yeah, exclusive.
That's exciting, especially since I bought Blu-rays for seasons 1 through 3 already.
Saw a piece somewhere on the internet yesterday that suggested that Netflix is getting carried away with spending all this money on content. They paid something like $100 million for Mad Men, about $1 million an episode.
That's crazy.
Because they feel the need now as the audience grows to constantly
have new stuff.
Yeah, they've got to satisfy their audience's craving for more
quality
content. They're spending around $100 million creating their own original content. Now they're spending $100 million on something like Mad Men.
Well, I mean, are you sure it was $100 million? That seems like a lot.
I think it was in the region of $1 million an episode, and there's about 100 episodes of Mad Men right now.
13 times 4.
Well,
no,
over the course of 7 seasons, it'll wind up to be around 100
episodes.
That
makes more sense.
Right now, there's about, 50, 60 episodes?
I mean, it's usually 13 episodes a season.
Right, and there's been four seasons. So about close to 60.
40, 52.
Does it turn out to be a dud in the end, like Heroes?
I think Mad Men at this point. I'm so happy.
Well,
with
Heroes
how
Mad went
Men
south a lot quicker than Mad Men has sustained four excellent seasons so far.
Heroes went south by the fourth episode, as I recall.
I never saw it up.
Save the cheerleaders.
It would
save
be a
the
sad
world.
Thing indeed if Mad Men at some point jumped the shark.
This is a conversation for a different podcast. But Intel's 10-core Xeon servers now. You can get a 10-core CPU, 20 threads with hyper-threading. So you can conceivably run 20 threads on a server CPU today if you went out and bought the right motherboard and the right CPU, which is crazy because the consumer CPUs cap out at 6 cores, 12 threads. Nobody's real excited about
nope,
this.
No,
don't rip DVDs, I guess.
Yep.
And then the last news item I have is that the Dish Network has purchased Blockbuster Video.
All the assets of
Blockbuster. Has that actually happened? I know they had the highest bid.
The highest bid for the auction. I mean, it'll go through, I'm sure.
No, I mean, when you buy Blockbuster Video, what's really left to buy?
Retail locations. Lots and lots of stores.
But what's Dish Network going to do with retail locations?
I think there will be Dish Network stores in every mall in America.
You think that's what it was?
Now. All they have is DirecTV that has football.
Well, Dish Network, also they have the streaming service. So they have streaming licenses that have to be worth something. So if Dish Network wants to do a hybrid service like DirecTV did where you stream on demand over the internet and TV over the satellite dish, live content over the satellite dish, then that's a kind of compelling offer.
What a sad descent it's been for Blockbuster.
Well, they moved slowly and were dicks for a long time.
They failed to see the storm coming for a long time.
And Netflix is a massive company now.
Yeah.
Oh, even Redbox.
Yeah.
Is what really hurt Blockbuster.
Well, they replaced the Redbox in my grocery store with a Blockbuster box.
Yeah, because that was a deal they made.
Yeah.
It's such a classic. In years from now, I think in business.
This is a business school lesson.
They'll teach this as an example of Blockbuster is a cautionary tale of what happens when the world changes around you and you just don't react.
Right. Oh, the internet, eh? So I guess that does it for news. Let me play the music and we will answer some reader questions. As always, if you have a question, podcast@tested.com. There's a great thread in the forums in the podcast folder explaining how to format your audio question properly. Use your headset, run it through Levelator. Don't send WMA files or WAV files. MP3, AAC, 3GPP, whatever the fuck that is, but that seems to work too. WMA files, I can't load. So there you go. Here's the first question.
Hey, Tested Crew. This is Todd from Atlanta. I'm looking to upgrade my video card, which is a GTX 260, but I've only got more card than I need for my size monitor, which is a 22-inch Samsung with a resolution of 16-something by 1050. What size card do you think I need for that size monitor without going overboard and throwing my money away? Second question with that is if I'm thinking of actually maybe doing a 3D display setup. If I do that, what card would you recommend? And then can I just get two more monitors at the same resolution and patch them in? Or do I actually need two more of the exact same model and everything? If so, I'm hosed since I quit making my particular model. And then lastly, if I do go that route, what kind of games are actually supported for through monitor setups? Is it pretty common or is it pretty rare? I hate to do all that and be for nothing. Last bit of info is my system specs are Core i7-920 and 6 gigs of RAM. Thanks.
Okay. I missed the first part of the question because the question sounded so bad, so hopefully somebody else caught that. But the if you're doing 3 monitor setups, ATI seems to have a pretty substantial lead in that technology.
If you want to do 3 monitors in gaming, you only want one card, you have to go ATI unless you're going the GTX 590. That is the only NVIDIA card where you do 3 monitors, 3D.
He didn't say 3D though, did he?
Well, I mean, three monitors, period.
Yeah.
And have it on one card and have graphics on all three at the same time. With the ATI, since you're only running 16 by 80 by 1050, if you're just going to use one monitor, then the 6850 is going to be fine. That's about $150. It's much better than the 6790 that just came out this week. But if you're actually going to do three monitors, I would go for a 6950.
Yeah, if you're going to do three monitors, well, or 6950 is a single GPU card or dual GPU card?
Single GPU card.
Yeah. I mean, at least. The three monitors, there's a large number of games that support it. There's a list on ATI's website. There's a list on NVIDIA's website. They both tell you which games are supported on their cards and three monitors. Basically anything with a console you can make work. There's some stuff that supports it out of the box.
And I would also recommend, depending on what your monitor is right now, you can even do the portrait mode. Three monitors, and that's actually getting very popular these
days. I think that's much more interesting. On whether you need the same monitor or not, I don't.
You do not.
You want the same resolution and you want the same size. So you don't want to have one monitor bigger than the other two with the same resolution, and you probably don't want to do 1920 by 1200 monitor for one and then two 1680 by 1050s because that's going
to
look janky.
The thing I used to like about having a dual monitor set up in Windows when you had I had games running in windowed mode,
mm-hmm.
is that I could be playing Warcraft or whatever,
yeah,
full screen,
yeah,
and but then have another screen where, you know, my email and everything else is always visible.
Well, that only works if the secondary screen's on the left of the screen with the game.
Really?
Generally, although Blizzard games have the window full screen windowed mode.
Yeah, it's a full screen window. Yeah, the only problem is you can accidentally kind of mouse right out of the game and over onto the other monitor.
Full screen windowed. Actually, the new ones
locks you in. Okay,
it's still full screen, but it's technically in a window, but you can't hit the borders.
You can alt tab. Yeah,
which is the best thing.
But it was useful if you have things like Ventrilo and you just want to see who's talking.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff's useful.
Yeah, or when we were on Skype watching playing TF2.
Yeah,
yeah,
that too.
Next question.
Hi, this is Brent from Dallas.
Oh, this one sounds good.
My little bit of trivia will not be about Dallas, but it will, in fact, be about myself. As I was listening to the last podcast, I realized that Will and I have a lot of similarities. We both grew up in Tennessee, and I actually went to the University of Tennessee as well.
Woo!
But then I am like the anti-Will. I took the different path and actually did go to medical school, and I'm currently a radiologist. And as I was listening to you guys talk about being a physician, I was actually at the hospital sleeping in a shared bed as I was working overnight. So maybe Will made the right choice. Anyway, my question is about my DVD player. I actually have a Blu-ray player hooked up to a 42-inch LCD. And when I play 480p content, frequently the signal will just drop for maybe 0.2 of a second or something, like it desynchronized, and then it will just come back. Anyway, let me know like what you guys think this could be. I've actually had this problem on multiple DVD players and multiple TVs, so I wonder if this is a problem with HDMI or something like that. Anyway, thanks.
So I've never actually seen that on my stuff. Although part of it probably depends on whether your Blu-ray player is sending a 40p signal to the TV or it's upscaling on the player and sending a 1080p signal to the TV or whatever the native resolution of the set is.
And it's on the Blu-ray player.
Yeah. I mean,
That's why I use a receiver.
What do you mean? Oh, use the receiver to upscale?
Yeah, use the receiver and let upscale there.
Yeah. I don't know. We'd have to know more about what models and stuff you have. Post it on the forums and somebody will help you out. But I mean, we check the forums as well. So if you post your system specs, your TV, your player and all that. The other thing is maybe check, like look at how your cables are running through the entertainment center. There's some types of lights and stuff like that, fans, power supplies, that'll cause a lot of EM interference, and that can affect HDMI, although I think that's kind of unlikely depending on – unless the cable run is very long. I do know that I always had one of those big halogen lamps that draws a lot of power and had an Ethernet cable that was around or underneath the base or something like that, and whenever that lamp was on, my data throughput speeds on the network were really bad, so – definitely it's worth paying attention to how the cables are run and maybe even take the Blu-ray player out of the system entirely and then plug the Blu-ray player in with the wire just not going anywhere bad. Next question.
Greetings, cast of the Tested Podcast. This is Daniel from Berthoud, Colorado. There aren't really many interesting facts about Berthoud other than we hit a milestone of 5,000 people. That's pretty awesome. And our high school, our robotics team is going to World.
Cool.
That's pretty awesome. So my question is about your opinions. Like, a lot of you seem to compare to Apple, and you kind of call Apple like the norm, and everybody has to not be like Apple, but kind of match their quality. I was thinking, like, what if, I don't know, a company like Microsoft came to the table first and they put out their idea? Would we all be comparing to Microsoft? Would we all like their Zune HD interface, the UI, and we would just think of Apple as a secondary? Or do you think it really depends on who comes to the table first, who puts their ideas out first? And also, I was wondering if you guys could recommend a good laptop for programming. Probably sub $600, that'd be probably a good price. And something pretty powerful that could run, I don't know, like AutoCAD or Autodesk or something like that. Yeah, thanks. Have a good day.
I think the reason we compare stuff to Apple is that they were first to market best. So it's not about who's first to market, although that does help, because sometimes they set the standard. If you look at like Xbox Live and Xbox was clearly first to market with real online console multiplayer. I mean, I know you could play online with the Dreamcast and stuff like that. But I mean, for the most part, Microsoft was online first, and Xbox Live is the gold standard for console multiplayer. I think Apple is, because they were the first to kind of take smartphones popular, have the same comparison, and they're also providing the best experience, I think, still.
I would love it if Microsoft actually did come to market first with something, just so that we could see what that was like.
Well, no, they have, and you could argue that a lot of, I think actually I'm going to make a prediction that a lot of the features that we saw in the Zune are going to make its way over to iOS in the future when the market is ready for it. Like the idea of squirting, I was thinking about this earlier, like sharing music.
Squirting.
I think the infrastructure just wasn't ready for it, and it was too big a feature to launch on without
it. Well, it was a third generation feature. We've talked about that before. But I mean, like the Zune UI stuff, I don't think the Zune didn't fail because the UI was bad or anything like that. The Zune HD isn't a product anymore because people aren't buying high-end MP3 players anymore. I mean, that's the long and short.
Yeah, and the Zune UI, which we now see in on the Xbox, in Netflix, and we see it in Windows Phone 7, that's a great UI.
Yeah. I think the Zune UI will – I mean, that seems to be the direction Microsoft's going. I wouldn't be surprised if this year's Xbox fall update is very metro-y,
The amount of animosity you receive in this life – seems now to be directly proportional to your success. You know, Microsoft was tremendously unpopular, and it was very trendy to hate on them when they were, you know, going great guns and in the middle of all the antitrust stuff. You know, when they were at their peak. Now Microsoft is kind of flailing around a little bit and doesn't seem that relevant anymore. A lot of the internet hate and the trendy hate has focused onto Apple because they are now the people in pole position.
And Google at the same time,
right?
Yeah. So would you rather be hated or pitied, Gary Whitta? Hated for being awesome or pitied for being second best?
Oh, hated.
Norm, hated. I know your answer. Yeah, hated. I'd rather take the fucking heat, make the product that's awesome. Did we answer all of his questions?
I think so.
Didn't he ask for a recommendation about something? Oh, a laptop. Yes. He wanted a sub $600 programming laptop that can also run AutoCAD, and I don't think that exists. But if you want a laptop that you can do decent programming stuff on that's relatively inexpensive, like the X220 Lenovo ThinkPad is a solid. It's not going to do 3D stuff because it's integrated graphics, but they've upgraded that with Sandy Bridge, and it's a solid laptop. We haven't tested it. They've traditionally made very good hardware. Basically, look for ULV processors. I don't think they call them that anymore. But don't buy netbooks. You don't want a netbook. You want a decent 13-inch laptop.
Do you feel like the whole netbook thing is
done?
Is gonna it came and went very quickly.
Netbooks are for kids.
Like it looked like it was going to be the next big thing, and then tablets kind of fucked it, right?
Well, it looked like it was the next big thing because they found a way to sell you a 3-year-old computer. No,
more than that. I mean, it's a fucking Pentium 3 inside that thing, basically.
But the novelty of the price. I remember looking at like those Asus. Ones that they had in Target for like $199. Holy shit, that's a $199 computer. That's real. That's kind of compelling
and
just on price alone.
I still know some people who use those as their only and primary computer.
Wow.
But I would recommend.
They wouldn't have a problem with the 48 hours with no internet challenge.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's their existence.
Yeah. Yeah. And they still come to me for tech support. Why is my computer so slow?
Yeah, because you bought a $200 computer.
It's a slow computer.
Yeah. I think there's a place for netbooks. The place for netbooks is education. Like if you work at a school, you're handing out shit for people to write papers on, netbooks are great for that.
Right.
If you want a computer that your kid can't get into any trouble with because it won't do anything, perfect. Right. If you want to actually use a computer, view video on the web, all that, netbooks. I mean, the ULV laptops, the mid-range $600, $700, $800, 13 and 12-inch laptops are much more compelling. They have real processors. They have core processors, not Atom processors. And they're much – they're just better products.
But it's interesting, isn't it? It definitely went from like a year or two ago when netbooks really seemed like they were going to be the next exciting segment. I think it seems like now it looks like they are going to be kind of relegated to the dustbin of history. It's just a fad.
Well, some companies – I mean, Asus is trying to change – what netbooks means, and they have that hybrid transformer netbook which is coming out, which is a tablet, runs Honeycomb, but you can have a keyboard attachment. So I think you want to see some type of merge between.
That's what the new netbooks will be, will basically be tablets with keyboards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's cool.
I mean, that's the thing. The mistake with netbooks was they started trying to run heavy desktop OSs on them.
Right.
If they'd put light.
That's the thing. Like Honeycomb and iOS, those are lean, mean OSs, which are better for these less powerful
and
systems.
They avoid the Linux problem of not having applications that people are familiar with. If you can get a Honeycomb tablet or an iOS tablet and run apps that you're familiar with on it, then that changes that dynamic.
They constrain you to the things that those devices are capable for.
Of course. Like
you're not going to get true multitasking windowed applications because it doesn't run well.
On the other hand, do you think Google is going to allow vendors to put Honeycomb on tablets with keyboards? No, probably not.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. A couple more questions here. We have still have a bunch from last week.
It's Jeff from Atlanta again. Got a quick question. Not sure how much you guys can talk about it, but just wondering, what is your average day at work like? Yeah, so that's it. Have fun. Always be testing.
Average day at work. Let's see. I get here about 9. First off, I get up in the morning and grab the iPad and read, go through my RSS feed reader and Twitter and read a whole shitload of articles. Read the other sites, Screen, Giant Bomb, Tested, and Comic Vine. And then I come in. Usually we shoot video, shoot at least one or two videos a day. Generally, some days we do two and then, you know, dole them out over a longer period of time. Write some stuff in the afternoon if I have time. Do the podcast one day a week. Edit the podcast one afternoon a week. What else? And then leave at 5:30 or 6. And read more at night. Norm?
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Pretty cushy life you got.
I mean, I go to lunch at some point in there. The dog comes in sometimes. That's nice.
Yeah. But it's not like you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go dig holes in the road, you know, like real working people or something.
No, Gary.
Do you ever – that's the whole point, is that I recognize myself as you know, one of the lucky ones as well. But do you ever come home at the end of the day going like, oh, what a day I had? Or is everything like –
No. I mean, I have a fucking awesome job. I wake up every day and
high five the mirror.
Yeah. I mean, why the fuck would I, like, I'm not an accountant. I'm sorry, accountants, but I mean, I don't have to sit and look at spreadsheets. If I look at spreadsheets all day, it's because I wanted to do a story that involved me doing math.
Right.
You know, it's, we get access to new hardware before people or at the same time as a lot of people. I mean, basically.
You get paid to do the stuff that you're already interested in.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of a blessing and a curse, because I had to discover new hobbies when I started, you know, before I started working in tech. Basically, what I would do at the end of a hard day at work was come home and fuck around with a computer and make it, you know, try overclocking or install Linux or, you know, try a new browser or do something unexpected. Right. Once that becomes your job, then you don't want to come home from work and, you know, and spend another 3 hours fucking around with DVD ripping software or whatever it is you're into at that particular time. And you have to kind of find balance in other ways. So I find myself reading more or you know, looking at reading graphic novels and comic books and stuff like that, stuff that I might not have done otherwise.
Right.
So, I mean, it's important. I find it important to have a hobby that isn't related to what I do every day for a living. I mean, do you agree, Norm?
Stop talking before people start hating you more.
Well, Norm, I mean, you watch StarCraft. You play StarCraft. I mean, that's a hobby at this point. You spend as much time on that as I do anything else.
I must not say anything.
Okay. We have awesome jobs. What do you do? What's a normal day like for you, Gary?
I don't really have a normal day because the way that my workflow, if you can call it that,
yes,
works is one day is not really like the other. There's ups and downs.
One morning you get up and have conference calls. One morning you get up and
If I'm in the middle of a project, then I'm writing all day and I can work for many, many hours. But there are times when I'm between projects or there's not a lot going on when, you know, I'll barely work at all.
You play all of Need for Speed Most Wanted in like a weekend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I just managed to I'm between a couple of projects right now, so I just managed to squeeze in a second playthrough of Mass Effect 2.
Squeeze in. Wow.
Squeezed it in.
Okay. Usually that's not what I do with anyway. I was going to say something really, really off color.
Mm.
Basically, yeah, I mean, yeah, you have a cush job though.
I'm very fortunate in that I get paid to do what I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And that is the number one piece of advice I would give to anyone find a way to get paid, find a way to do what you enjoy as your job. Because if you are stuck in a job,
absolutely,
like you said, if you don't enjoy looking at spreadsheets, do not get a job that involves you doing that. You will end up very miserable.
And also, even if you are in that job, save money so you don't feel like you're indebted to that job and you can never leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Norm, do we need to have a talk after this?
No. I'm
okay. Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, like, if you have a job that you don't like when you're 25, you're going to fucking loathe it by the time you're 40.
Yes.
Follow your
passion. Yeah, identify what it is that you are passionate about and find a way to do that for your job.
And awesome. I mean, always be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do one more question and then some fake outtakes.
Hey, Tested.
Oh, shit. I already did that one.
Hello, Tested. This is Paul from Indiana, and I got some hometown trivia. The little town that I grew up in of Rochester, Indiana, was the birthplace of the original Tarzan. His name was M.L. Lincoln, played in Tarzan of the Apes in 1918. And then I also heard growing up quite a few times that one of the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz either was born and or lived there, but I wasn't able to verify that on Wikipedia, so that may or may not be true. Anyways, my question is, this summer I'm going to be doing a little bit of traveling, so I would like to take a laptop along, but I'm probably not going to be using it a whole lot other than when I'm out and about. And so the only things I'm really going to be doing with it is maybe play some indie games on it from Steam, and I need to do like some very light audio editing, which is basically just like cut and splice and render. My budget's about $500, and I've kind of looked around, but I'm not really sure what market I should be in. I haven't really looked at laptops before. So maybe if you could throw out a couple suggestions, I'd really appreciate it. And anyways, thanks for answering my question, and keep on testing.
So yeah, same thing we said before. $700 Lenovo HP. Go look in that range. Asus makes $700 laptops. Look for CULV and ULV, and for audio rendering, that stuff's fine. Core 2 or newer. So I guess that wraps it up for questions. Podcast@tested.com. Keep them short, under a minute. All the stuff I said before. I think that's it, right? Use your headphones.
Late breaking news item.
Okay.
Courtesy of Engadget. Samsung confirms Wi-Fi only Galaxy Tab availability April 10th, $350.
Is this the Galaxy Tab 7 or is it Galaxy Tab 8.9 or 10?
Original.
Yeah, this looks like the original shitty Galaxy Tab.
Oh, wow. They should pay you $350 to take that sled.
Yeah.
Okay. Pasadena on that. I'm playing the music. Then we're going to do the thing. Thanks to Gary Witta and Norman Chan, as always, for popping in for this week's episode of The Test. I'm Will Smith. Chloe Bananas has been sitting here quietly. Thank you guys for listening. Sleeping. We will be back next week with another episode. Until then, keep on testing.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested.
Sometimes we do stuff that's awesome. Sometimes we do stuff that's just dumb and
tested.
Okay, I have three potential topics for this week. Did we talk about the Ben and Jerry stuff on air, or was that before we started the show?
That was before we started the show.
I want to talk about it again, then.
Okay.
Virgin, do you see the Virgin Oceanic
thing? That's probably the biggest
thing. Well, hold on. We got three things. Let me give you all three. We'll choose your own adventure. You can choose what we talk about.
I'm going to put fingers in all the pages of this book.
Virgin Oceanic. That's Richard Branson's return to the Marianas Trench and other deep places in the oceans with a submarine, a one-man sub.
Okay.
The SpaceX. This is Elon Musk's, the Tesla guy's rocket ship company, SpaceX. They are saying that they're going to have the Falcon Heavy, which will be the largest rocket, largest, heaviest capacity rocket to launch since the Saturn V, the thing that sent us to the moon. Or Heartbeat.
Wait.
Yeah.
Sent us to the moon. That was Apollo 11, wasn't it?
Well, but Apollo 11 was the name of the mission, the rocket that launched the mission.
Oh, the rocket was the Saturn V. Yeah. Okay, I see.
And then the final one is heartbeat-powered nano generators. All of these things are interesting to me. I'm prepared to talk about any of them or whatever other topics you'd like to address.
What's the purpose of the rocket? Where would it go?
To space.
Just space.
And then what?
Just outside. It's just a commercial space flight.
Yeah, commercial space flight.
Privatized space flight.
Possibly manned space tourism eventually.
Without the government having
to. So what, it just goes into space and comes back down?
Well, but the thing is they're able to carry much bigger loads than we have had for the last 30 years.
Which means what? Like passengers and stuff?
No. So, I mean, 117,000 pounds is the capacity of the Falcon Heavy.
Right.
The Saturn V's capacity was 262,000 pounds. That's pretty big. I mean, that's enough. That basically carries another spaceship up that can then fire off into the moon. Basically, what Elon Musk said is with two of these Falcon Heavy launches, we could go to the moon or possibly interplanetary missions.
Okay.
We could get enough stuff up into orbit. So if you compare that to the space shuttle, which I'm going to look up right now, I mean, is privatized space interesting to you guys?
For some reason, it doesn't interest me that much.
I don't trust it.
Why not? I trust it. I mean, do you trust Amtrak or Ford more?
Who can I sue?
Something's
wrong.
It just sounds so unambitious. It's like,
who's likely to cut more corners for profits?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. You cut corners and then that ends up biting you in the ass because once you kill a couple of people,
Steve Buscemi rightly pointed out in Armageddon, all the components are built by the lowest bidder.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so true.
I need to go back and rewatch that. That had a good ISS bit or Mir bit, I guess.
It was Mir, although I don't think they were allowed to call it Mir for some reason.
It was more.
They just called it the Russian space station.
So the payload to low Earth orbit for the space shuttle is 53,600 pounds. So roughly half of what this Falcon Heavy is.
Right, but my question is again, what's it taking up there and what's it going to do when it gets
into space?
Satellites
and stuff like that. Yeah. Satellites, habitats. They're going to send pieces of the space shuttle up with the normal Falcon. The not heavy lifting variant. But say if we wanted to build a moon base, then you could launch the components with this thing and then assemble them in orbit and fire them off toward the moon from here.
Okay.
So that's interesting. Or, you know, giant communication satellites.
But it's not that exciting to me because I know it's all stuff that we can do. It's just a question of paying for it.
We can't do it after. I mean, we've got two more space shuttle launches and then that's done. The US doesn't have launch capacity.
Right. It's not that we don't have the technology. It's just that we choose not to spend the money on it.
Well, that's probably true.
That's all there is.
So you're saying we have the will.
We haven't invented the science.
We don't have the will.
We haven't invented a new rocket. Like you said, this rocket has half the capacity of something that launched men to the moon 40 years ago. It's just that someone's found a way to pay for it.
Well, the interesting thing about this is that they think that they can get this with this particular rocket under the $1,000 a pound barrier to get it into orbit.
Okay.
Which means that the cost to do it is significantly lower than, say, a Saturn V. I don't know.
So that's interesting.
Right.
If it lowers the barrier, then that's good.
So, this was something that the space shuttle promised and then never delivered on, was that we were supposed to, you know, if we were launching 3 space shuttles a month or whatever it was they promised when they were doing appropriations for this, we supposedly could have gotten under $1,000 a pound or kilogram. I'm not sure which one. I don't know what the cost per pound was on the Saturn V. I'm sure it was phenomenally expensive by today's standards, even by space shuttle standards, much less, privatized space flight standards.
Do you think when we do – we talked about this a little bit last week, but do you think when we do eventually put a man on Mars, it will be governments or corporations that do it?
Governments.
I don't think it's going
to
be the United States.
There's no money for corporations to do
it. But I've played Deus Ex. It's all corporations in the future.
It's one coffee – it's Starbucks versus Pete's, but the same company owns both.
Yeah, there'll be a race between Walmart and Starbucks to put the first store on Mars. They're the ones that can afford it.
Apple.
Yeah, first Apple store and Netflix. On Mars.
The Apple, yeah, exactly. I wonder
what the line would be like.
Probably pretty short.
Yeah.
The drive over is pretty rough, though.
Yeah, it took a while to get over there, but once you're there, it's all good.
No, the question is, for the iPad, the fucked up 12. Thing, the fucked up thing about that is if you went to Mars to get the iPad 17, you'd probably be on the same ship that delivers the iPad 17, and you just wouldn't be able to open it. It'd be in a hermetically sealed crate.
Oh, that'd be so frustrating.
Yeah, it's right there. It's sleeping with you right next door. You're just not. You can't open it.
This
up.
Is when we tackle the space issues that matter.
Yeah. Well, that would be the space pad, not the iPad. We'll be beyond that at that point. Okay. So, privatized space flight, not that exciting.
Not to me.
Okay.
So not until we do something that we haven't already done.
Well, I mean, space tourism is around the corner. That's going to happen soon, I think. The Burt Rutan, you know, either the Virgin Galactic or
one reason to save a couple $100,000 and get in good shape.
Yeah. You could quit your job, be secure for a while, or 4 minutes in orbit or in some orbital.
It's not that exciting to me. It's like it's just a very expensive roller coaster ride.
Well, in order for
how are we advancing science by doing that?
In order for like the Virgin Galactic thing to be something that is worth spending money on, $100,000 has to be an inconsequential amount of money to you,
right?
Like if you have Bill Gates' money, $100,000 is he spends $100,000 the same way we spend $2 for a parking meter,
right?
I mean, he probably doesn't. That's why he has billions of dollars. But I mean, the scale is the same.
I just look at it, turning it into a tourism enterprise is like the least ambitious thing that you could do with the idea of going.
But
into
the idea
space.
Of turning it into a tourism enterprise is that they fund development of further technology to do more by taking money.
I
from
guess.
The super
I mean,
rich.
If it becomes profitable, I mean, that's the problem with NASA, right? Is that they constantly have to beg the government for money because they can't generate their own profit. If a company could become rich doing it, that they could just keep pushing further and further out.
Do you think astronauts have to sign a liability waiver? Like, hey, if we accidentally blow you up, we're not going to your family's not going to sue us. Where NASA sure. is in, and the U.S. government are indemnified.
I don't think they have to do that any more than anyone who joins the military would have to. If you get shot, you get shot. You know the risks when you sign up.
I guess
up,
that's true. And you have a pension or whatever for loss or damage.
Right.
Okay. Other topics. Heartbeat powered nano generators.
I don't even know what that means.
So basically, they've attached carbon nanotubes, nanowires, to a thing that can generate, I think, 4 volts of electricity.
Enough to charge your phone.
When it's churned in your bloodstream. Yeah. That's kind of exciting because that means that opens the door for a pill that you swallow or a shot that you take that then is like, I have this thing on my arm that tells me how many calories I burn.
The most important muscle in your body, the one that you will die if it stops working.
Yeah.
So we can use extra iPhone for an extra 10 minutes.
Well, or you could use it for medical technology sorts of other stuff. I mean, like a pacemaker that never requires a battery. Right now, if you have to get a battery changed in your pacemaker, they got to open you up. Or you use the through-the-skin induction charger, I guess. But I mean, there's technology there. It's exciting.
Yeah, more.
Gary looks like he's about to fall asleep in the sweaty
cyborg
hot room.
Technology.
I just, there's that whole area where we start implanting things and we get into kind of transhumanism where I start – it just sounds more bad than good.
Really? You wouldn't go for an implant?
Transhumanism, that one word. It's exciting.
I'm not a transhumanist.
So if you had the opportunity to get a neural implant that gave you the ability to look up anything on the internet, connect to anybody immediately, and you wouldn't do that?
Depends who made it.
Well, okay. If it's Apple makes that, you're
in,
right?
This is one area.
The iBrain.
This is one area where I'm not going to be an early adopter. I'm going to let everyone else try out the first generation of the technology, and then I'll jump in on the second.
Well, it's like LASIK. Like, I'm not going to get LASIK until after a couple of years.
LASIK has been out for 10 years now. It's been a couple of years. Now is the time if you're going to do it.
Yeah, I still, like, for example, LASIK at this point, I'd feel fairly – I still wouldn't want to do it, but I feel confident about it. Yeah.
I would have LASIK if
I could do it. The first year that it came out, I would not have felt great. If my iPad breaks because I bought the first one and it wasn't ready for prime time, then fair enough. If my fucking eyeballs melt, then that's more of a problem.
Right. I say buy early, buy often.
walk out of that LASIK shop and your eyes are going to crust over completely.
I saw that episode of Simpsons. I think the neural implant stuff, you're right. It is something you don't want to have to crack the skull open every year and pop a new one in. But assuming that getting the first generation one doesn't preclude you from later upgrading that process, upgrading that technology, why would you not? It'd be like if everybody else has neural implants and you're the holdout, you're walking around in a world full of supermen and you're, mentally challenged, handicapped even.
You would, by the dictionary definition, be handicapped.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is by the time everyone else is doing it, I would probably feel fairly safe about doing it as well. I'm saying I'm not leaping in there.
You're a herd
mover. I'm not going to be a pathfinder when it actually involves shit going into under my skin or whatever.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you the first time somebody walks up to you and says, oh, hey, Gary, they don't know you. They just looked you up on Facebook because they did a face recognition. And they knew exactly who you were and
your details.
All the stuff you've done. And they had a conversation and you were like, who the fuck? I'm terrible at remembering people's faces. I can never know. I never know who I'm talking to.
Right.
Except for people I know well.
Right.
So, dude, I'm in just for face recognition.
Get off the grid.
Yeah.
Delete your about.me page.
Oh, man. I don't want to delete my about.me page. I got a good one. Okay. So no on the nano sensors.
I feel like I have a healthy skepticism.
Norm, you're in for the implant, right?
I'm young enough that it'll be good.
Right.
I'll be good for them.
Right. What if the implant also backs up your brain so you actually get killed? They just plug you back into a fresh body or upload you to the computer.
See, that I like.
Okay. So for immortality, you'll do it. but for instant Google search in the brain, not so much.
I would need to see what right now the ideas are all. It's all still too.
Think of how fast those UIs in your brain are going to be. You know, it's going to be like an iPad times 25.
So I have like Terminator vision. Like I'm looking at you, but I'm seeing like all your information scrolling past my eyes.
Oh yeah, exactly. 6'2", 230 pounds.
Your pet peeves include
right.
You like walks on the beach.
Yeah, exactly. Pina coladas, getting caught in the rain. Okay, so then Virgin Oceanic is the big news. It seems.
Is James Cameron involved in this?
I don't think so. I think it's Richard Branson. Who's
I'm surprised?
Who's the same level of crazy and rich.
Yeah,
a little more rich.
I don't know at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe Branson's more rich.
It doesn't matter. But the upshot is, it's a one man submarine that you lay down on your stomach and you fly through the water at 4 knots, which I think is like a million miles an hour
straight down.
Well, 385 feet per minute vertical change. Is that right? That seems right.
How far? But the point is you're going very deep. Is that
basically
the point?
We haven't been to the Marianas Trench since the Bathyscape Trieste did in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And that was like a crazy Navy project where they took a giant ass thing full of diesel fuel that looked like a blimp almost. You've seen the pictures of this thing, right?
Maybe.
Okay, I'll look that up while I'm explaining. This thing, so basically there's a blimp filled with diesel fuel.
That sounds safe to begin with.
Well, it does.
Underwater blimp.
Diesel fuel doesn't burn, so it's safe. Here we go. Bathyscape Trieste.
Yeah, it's very famous.
It's super famous. It's the deepest diving submarine that's ever existed.
And is there a man in there?
Yeah, two men. Yeah.
Okay.
So the men are in this little tiny ball that's hanging off the bottom of this thing. And what they did was they just let this – there's no kind of side-to-side propulsion. It's basically just like a hot air balloon for the water.
Mm-hmm.
So the diesel fuel provides buoyancy, and on the bottom there's these giant lead weights. So they just ride it down, express elevator to hell going down.
And then they drop the weights and come back up?
Drop the weights and they get to the bottom and come back up. But they can't move around on the bottom. They can't go anywhere.
If they get stuck, they're fucked.
Yeah. When you're in the Marianas Trench
– So how deep did it go?
The deepest.
Yeah, this is the deepest we've ever been. It was launched, blah, 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 blah. Wow. The Trieste was purchased for $250,000. That seems pretty cheap. 85,000 liters of gasoline. Sorry, not diesel.
Which is combustible.
That is combustible, but at that pressure, probably not.
And underwater, probably not.
Here we go. Marianas Trench dives. It was on a freighter called the Santa Maria. That's funny.
11,000.
Is that where you're seeing? Where you're seeing that? I see 10,900 meters, 35,797 feet.
Okay, which in the scale of the Marianas Trench is how deep?
I think that is the Marianas. I think the Challenger Deeps are part of the Marianas Trench. Yeah, they are. So the deepest dive. Was originally they thought it was 11,521 meters, but new measurements have shown that it was 10,916 meters at the place they dived, 35,814 feet. So 7 miles, more, a little less than seven
miles.
Right,
but my question is, like, we've never actually been down to the bottom of the deepest
place. The Marianas Trench is the deepest place we're aware of.
But we haven't been to the bottom of it.
We have been almost to the bottom. The deepest part the Challenger Deep is – I mean I can look this up on Google, but I think the Challenger Deep was widely accepted to be the deepest place.
Anyway, the point is we're going back. Sexier than ever.
Yeah, and this time we can fly around. So they can go down. This thing looks super cool. It looks like it looks like something from SeaQuest.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever watched that, but basically –
one man torpedo ship.
Yeah, it looks like there's wings in the front. There's wings on the back. With that, they kind of do the swooping up and down, and they can go down very quickly.
It sounds
apparently.
Like a coffin, which is probably not a good sign.
I mean, it could easily transform into a coffin. You should.
A couple of questions. How does it survive the crushing
science.
Pressure at that depth? It uses science.
Yes, it uses science.
Materials. Material science.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, where that Trieste thing. I left that page already, but. Where the Trieste had like a couple of little tiny portholes, you can see it's like a piece of quartz glass probably that's a foot across maybe.
Yeah.
This thing, let me Google, like get this open so you can compare. This thing has a big ass glass window because we're better at materials now.
Mm-hmm.
This is exciting to me. And they're going to fly back. It's one man though. So if something goes bad, they're never going to know what happens. It's just going to be a fucking tin can on the bottom of the floor.
I'm going to retrieve that black box.
You're not. There's no rescue at 11,000, at 35,000 feet.
Right.
You're done. Looking up Virgin Oceanic. And here we are. Here's what it looks like. This guy right here.
It kind of looks like the James Bond Lotus Esprit.
It does look like the Lotus Esprit. That's what I was looking for yesterday when I was looking at these pictures.
When that went underwater.
Yeah, you can see it has the canard wings, the rear tail.
Now, is there one guy in there?
One dude inside the glass canopy.
Okay.
And so Richard Branson, so they got some poor schmuck to do the deep one in the Marianas Trench.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard Branson's going to do the one off Puerto Rico.
What? He's doing it himself?
He's flying it himself.
Oh, man. It sure sounds like something the renegade billionaire would do.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? So, yeah. So this is nobody's excited about any of this stuff. I really flopped on the science news.
No, I like the deep ocean. I think it's interesting.
We talked about it last week. You know, why not explore the oceans?
We've explored more of space than we have of the deepest parts of the ocean.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's because there's probably nothing down there.
So what have you guys been doing?
Well, last week, after we recorded our podcast, and we were extremely hungry because we had the decision of eating before or after the podcast.
Yeah.
We had to go get lunch after. And you made the proposition, how much would it take?
An indecent proposal, as it were.
Yeah.
How much would it take for me, in my hunger, to also not eat for another 24 hours?
Yes.
Now,
up with around $5,000.
No, Will immediately said $200.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, boom, $200.
Which we could have scraped up.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have been willing to pay for that spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. And then
I'm the offer stands.
And then I said $5,000.
It's $400 now, though.
Now, based on the kind of the internet rules we were talking about earlier, would we be allowed to kind of stand in front of you and eat, sandwiches?
Oh, yeah.
Meatloaf sandwiches.
Well, I'm allowed to walk away, though.
What's that?
I'm allowed to walk away. How do you monitor? Do you, like, monitor, do you monitor things going in and out? I mean,
he would have to be supervised all the time.
You'd have to be supervised.
Well, for $4,000,
which kind of solves itself because I'm going to want to watch anyway.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm going to want to
make some popcorn,
sit there with a big tub of Americone Dream, and go, so tasty.
Right at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're sitting on the chair by Norm's bed, just watching him, and he wakes up.
Yeah, frying up bacon.
Right. Right. Hey, I just made some chili.
It's the best $200 ever spent.
Yeah,
but you actually wanted more like $5,000.
$5,000.
Well, the thing is, for $200, you don't get constant monitoring.
For five grand,
there's a team of experts.
Now, and again, this again touches on the idea of the sunk cost fallacy and the way that you look at things. So Norm, I said, well, what about $4,000? And he said, no, I wouldn't do it for that. I want my meatloaf sandwich or whatever. You got the cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of eating the cheeseburger, I said, you realize you just basically ate a $4,000 cheeseburger.
Well, if that offer was real.
Well, you don't know if it was.
I said $4,000. I said $5,000 because $4,800. I want to see per hour. I want to make $2,000 an hour not eating, drinking water.
Richard Branson, $200 an hour not drinking, you mean?
No, $2,000.
If it's $4,000 and it's 24 hours.
Maybe $200 an hour.
$200.
$200 an hour is still a lot of money.
Gary, this is when we discovered your persona. If you had an infinite amount of money, you would not be the renegade billionaire.
No, if I was very rich,
you'd be the asshole billionaire.
I would just pay Norm money to punish himself so I could watch and enjoy. Now starve yourself.
Right. Now eat. If you can eat 55 hot dogs, $5,000.
Yeah.
You have an hour.
Yeah.
Go.
Well, that's the worst because that's something that as you near the hour mark, you see the money flying away. You talk about sunk costs.
There's
this chance for failure.
They used to have this Japanese game show in the 80s called Endurance where they made the contestants do awful things
horrible.
Like crawl through boxes of scorpions and stuff.
Yeah.
The final challenge was just two guys that had to starve for the longest possible time and they would put all these delicious dishes
so
in front
wrong.
Of them well, then, until one guy broke down and started eating the noodles or whatever it was they had in front of them.
Survivor, what crappy like pansy Galoot. Thing they do or it's just whoever's can hold the bar the longest.
My argument was even though the 24 hours would probably be quite agonized because again you're already hungry.
Yeah.
He hasn't eaten for like 12 hours or whatever it is. Now you go to 24. But just think that the anticipation of how good that burger would taste at the end of the 24 hours would be the best burger you've ever had.
With the I
would
stack think, of $5,000.
Yeah, exactly. With all that money.
Yeah, how many burgers you can buy with $5,000.
Yeah, now you're basically being paid $5,000 to eat the tastiest burger ever. See, that's the way they rationalize it.
Would you go someplace special? Would you like go to like the? Would you buy into the French Laundry and have like the French Laundry?
No, you wouldn't need
to
because even just a Big Mac would taste great.
Oh, you're talking about the old fable.
I don't think so, actually.
The Emperor and the most delicious meal ever ate. It was slop.
Never heard this before.
It was slop because he was hungry.
Exactly. That's the point.
But here's the thing. You don't want to wait too long because if your stomach gets screwed up from not eating, then you can't just gorge at the end of that.
Well, yeah, but that was for like people that are in concentration
into
camps.
It. Yeah,
not, like, for 24 hours without a cheeseburger.
It's not fucking Rwanda, dude.
Does not exactly put you in that category. Right. No one's going to be starting a charity appeal for you within 24 hours because you haven't had a cheeseburger.
It's Chilean miners.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing is I went last night to the grocery store and I bought some of the Jimmy Fallon ice cream. What I was thinking we could do – I forgot to bring it in because I'm a nitwit. But what I was thinking we could do is I will describe the ice cream both positively and negatively and we'll only use the cut that I'll taste it when I go home. If it's good
– No.
You think it's too elaborate?
No. It's too elaborate.
We should do the Ben & Jerry's best flavor challenge.
Bring it next week. I want ice cream.
Let's do.
I am definitely interested to try this Jimmy Fallon flavor that has potato chips in it.
Yeah. I wanted to see if we can scientifically determine what the best Ben & Jerry's flavor is.
It's American Dream. It's already been scientifically determined.
That's entirely arbitrary. I want to go through and do some real hardcore testing.
But taste is arbitrary.
Tested.
Oh, here's multiple people. So I was reading online. I think I saw this on Boing Boing. They're now selling the hottest pepper. You can buy it. For cooking, the hottest pepper.
Oh, it's the shepherd's crook or something like that.
Isn't that a Scotch bonnet?
Scotch bonnet. That's it.
Whatever it is, it's on the scale of hotness. It's in the millions.
The Scobles.
Yeah, the Scobles. And then following up on that, you're reading about these people who all they want are the hottest things because they basically their taste buds are not.
Well, they're broken. They have fewer taste buds per square inch than normal people by an order of magnitude.
Right. So is it really fair for those people? Because they're not really suffering from the hotness. It's not like they're getting the full flavor. It's just because they have broken tongues. I'm not impressed by that.
No. I like spicy food, but there does come a point where it's just way – it goes beyond
– Right.
I like really spicy. I like spicy where it's just one notch on the dial below – awful now because it's too hot.
See, I like one notch above uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah, I like a little
spicy.
But then it's
foods,
bad on the other
like peppers,
end.
Peppers, there are two reasons have this. One, because there's actually flavor in spice, in spiciness.
Yes.
Like the pepper itself has a flavor. And also because of the uncomfort, the discomfort can be appealing for food.
Well, sometimes it works as a taste multiplier.
Yeah.
So because you irritate your taste buds and your nose.
You see, I find that when it's so spicy,
it's like
actually it overpowers whatever the flavor
is. Too spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for these people who just, you know, they go to like the challenges, the chili pepper challenges, and because they basically have tongues
that aren't
developed. Yeah, they're just freaks. And I think the article talked about this guy who nothing is spicy enough for him, and he carries like eye drops, or he carries like a little small canister of the oil.
Oh, the capsaicin?
Yeah. And then he just, like, yeah. If it's not spicy
enough,
he takes an eyedropper.
I think it's capsaicin. A friend of mine is really into super hot sauces, and he gave me a bottle once of this stuff that's called pure cap.
I think that's
what you're talking about.
For a normal person, if you just smell it, like your eyes just burn.
It comes in an eyedropper.
Yeah.
The childproof bottle and an eyedropper, and one drop would basically be enough for like a catering pot full of chili.
Yeah.
I mean, it's serious stuff.
So here's the scale on the Scoville scale.
The hottest I ever had, I had a bottle of stuff that was 1 million Scovilles.
So that's the pure cap. Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's 1 million is...
pure cap is only 570,000.
1 million is a Scotch bonnet.
Right.
Tabasco sauce is 2,500 to 5,000.
So is this a logarithmic scale or is it a linear scale?
I assume it can't be a logarithmic scale because it would be crazy.
So I used to say that you've had something that is, 50 times spicier?
The two hottest I ever owned was one called H750, which was 750,000. And I don't remember what the stuff above that was called, but it was 1 million units.
So describe the sensation.
Well, the thing is, like I had a friend that tried to do this one time, and he took one of the 750, took one drop on the eyedropper, directly onto his tongue.
Okay, on the tongue, not his eye. Okay, good.
And,
Jesus Christ! Yeah, mace yourself. Why don't you?
And seriously, was sick the rest of the day. Had to go to his car and lie down, and was actually quite ill.
Oh my goodness.
Because it's that dangerous.
I had I went to a place with a friend of mine in New York once that serves fall, which is like an Indian, crazy hot Indian thing. And the motherfuckers in the back
were, fall is the hottest Indian curry.
Yeah, and they were cooking it with the respirators on.
Yeah, there's the vindaloo, which is the hottest like that you'll commonly get here.
Yeah,
it's very
there's
delicious.
Then a tindaloo,
okay,
which is hotter. And then the phal, phal,
right,
which actually isn't even on most Indian menus.
It was horrible.
You have to ask for it, specifically off the menu.
It was something that like the, you know, it was the deal where you go and you get the free meal or whatever if you can eat it. And that
generally with Indian curries, the darker the color, the hotter it is. Like for example, a korma, which is very mild, is kind of yellow.
Yeah.
You go up through the Madras and the vindaloo is generally quite red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tindaloo will be darker red, and a phal is dark brown to black.
Yeah. It tasted bad before it got in my mouth.
Yeah.
So here's a question: would you rather be tased or
tased.
eat a plate of that the phal?
You know why?
Why?
Because the phal is painful on the way in and the way out.
And the way out. You are going to have the ring of fire the next day.
Right. I mean, tasting things on the way out, not
your
good.
Your sphincter the next day is going to be like a fresh bullet wound.
You're going to fill a bathtub with milk and just fucking sit down the moment that passes.
So, I mean, generally that when you're dealing with Scoville. So,
honey, I need a stick of butter right now.
When you, I mean, I did a chili cook-off thing once, and it's so easy to overcompensate. Like I put, I think, one drop or two eyedrops of the pure cap into like a gallon.
Not salted, Jesus Christ.
It's, there's a macho thing that's associated with this.
Yeah.
And again, the point, it doesn't matter how hardcore you are, unless you do have some kind of freak taste bud situation going on. It's way easier. Like if you said to me, "Oh, I can eat anything. I don't care how hot it is. Trust me, I can make something that's too hot for you to eat." And it's not difficult to do. I'll just put a lot of pure cap in it, and it will be inedible.
You just put any pure cap in it for most people, and it's gonna be too much.
I don't know what the sensation is. Like, is your entire mouth on fire?
Yeah. The fall, like you touched it to your tongue and your entire, like there was an intense burning, but the rest of your mouth would have been really painful.
And it lingers. I mean, it takes a long, you know, water won't do anything. I mean, drinking milk is really what you need to do. It's the only thing you can do. But it, you know, you'll be suffering for a long time.
So this is something we've talked about before, is like the fringe cases, right? I mean, this is where a lot of superhero stories come from. The people who, and urban legends and myths are the people that are in the 1% of population. So in this case, we're talking about the people who have a very small number of taste buds. On the other end of that spectrum are people who have a whole shitload of taste buds.
Oh yeah. I want to rather be that person. I want to taste.
Well, that sounds like that would be fun. I think. I think I'm somewhere in between. I don't have any illusions of being a super taster.
Well, does that mean that you experience and extract more of the flavor, or just that you're more sensitive to flavor?
You're much more sensitive. So where you drink a glass of wine or have a cup of coffee and you taste coffee and maybe chocolate and something else, they'll be able to taste it and detect plums and all sorts of other crazy flavors.
But a lot of that is also experience too.
A lot of that is experience and training.
But my question is, does that mean that what might taste quite mild to you tastes spicier to me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this.
And one of the things is, I mean, a lot of people, for example, my parents like much less spicy food than I do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that people have said is that perhaps having the ability to sense spiciness is some of these different things may have evolutionary pressures that we haven't really thought about. So it may be a benefit to be able to detect spicy stuff in small quantities. So the ability to taste to withstand to have more taste buds per square inch may be evolutionary beneficial.
But if you're in a restaurant and you order something, like if you're in a Thai restaurant and you order a curry,
right,
and the guy says to you, "Would you like that mild, regular, or spicy?"
I would say spicy.
You always say spicy?
Wow. Unless,
me too.
Unless it says – unless I'm someplace that I know is serving especially spicy food.
I made the mistake recently. I order food from an Indian restaurant, and the curry I get from there is usually a little mild for my taste. So when I ordered last time, I specified extra spicy.
Oh, no.
I should have specified just spicy. Because I think they went, "Oh, he wants extra spicy," and it was right on the border of like, this is almost unpleasant to eat. It's so hot. Yeah. And I, like I said, I want to be there and then crank it one notch back, and that's my sweet spot.
Well, so we also talked about the people who have the like mirror image organs, which is another low percentage thing where, you know, your liver's on the left side instead of the right side.
Ninja assassin.
Exactly. The thing that was there was a thing in Wired yesterday about people who require less sleep. Did anybody read that?
Oh, I want that power.
I think you have that power, actually.
I do have that power. Because you 3 a.m.
sleep
every night.
Yeah, you sleep 4 hours
every morning,
and you're the same amount of functional I've always seen.
3 cups of coffee.
Like I can do 6 hours for a few days in a row.
You know what the trick is, Will?
What?
Going to the gym.
The gym?
The gym.
Really?
Metabolism keeps you awake. I cannot sleep on BART anymore since going to the gym.
Interesting. Well, maybe I'll start exercising again more regularly. I need to anyway for training for Amazing Race, I guess. Yeah, I mean, but this was about people, a very, very small percentage of people actually only sleep 4 hours a night and they're fine, 4 or 5 hours a night and they're fine, as opposed to the normal 7 hours. And the thing that was interesting about this is a lot of people feel like they don't need 6 hours or 7 hours of sleep, but most people do. People self-identify as not needing sleep.
Also, you kind of make it up on the weekend.
I don't think that's really how it works. Yeah. I mean,
it certainly works for me.
Well, in that case.
I mean, I think it's good that you go to the gym. I agree with that. But generally saying I only need 4 hours of sleep a night because I drink a lot of coffee doesn't sound like that's
not what
the
way to go. But you don't drink that much coffee.
I drink 2 cups, usually one in the morning and one after lunch.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And I think actually 3 is – when they say coffee's bad for you, I think that most of the science says you can 3 cups a day is what you can drink before it becomes an issue. So you're okay. You're within
– Otherwise, you get
tolerated. It's the 5 Red Bulls that really get him in trouble.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting story. It was on Wired and I think Wall Street Journal picked it up today. But they're looking for people who don't sleep much.
But also some of those people, they just sleep at different times. Like they do the napping. They do 4 hours at night and then they do the
Well, that's a different thing. That's a different thing. The thing that this said is there's no – like normally if you are a person who needs 7 hours of sleep and you like – and then they test your reflexes and reaction times and ability to make decisions quickly and stuff like that, then usually there's a marked degradation when you – on a day that you have 4 hours of sleep versus a day that you have 8 hours of sleep. With these people, there's no degradation. And it also said that the people seem to be almost manic, just in general.
If you could take a pill that would
– Well,
I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. But if you could take a pill that would negate the need for sleep with no ill effects, would you take it?
Would negate meaning that I couldn't sleep? That's like an insomnia pill, but no ill effects, no mental ill effects, but –
It's good to qualify this before you say yes or no.
Exactly. Like if I wanted sleep, could I still sleep? Because I enjoy sleeping. It's not like I don't enjoy it.
No, you just don't ever feel the need to sleep.
See, that's hard to say. I don't think I would say yes.
Because I think sleeping is pleasurable.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I like dreams. You know, getting tired and then going to sleep.
Yes, but for a winner like you, I think your attitude would be like anytime you're asleep is like that's like a quarter of your life that you're not spending winning.
It is absolutely true. A third. That's why I sleep very late.
Yeah, but Norm sleeps less.
Because you're very it's very easy to get productive and to get ahead over everyone else if you're productive while everyone else is asleep. But
just think of the edge you could be getting on us while we're asleep.
Well, he is every night.
You'd be plotting against us.
It's how you fit everything in.
When I was in my 20s, the fact that
I know there's 4 hours out of every day now where I'm asleep and Norm isn't, that's
– Makes you nervous,
it unsettles me.
I'm catching up. Maybe not on Twitter.
Norm's already lived more life than you have and he's 10 years younger.
Yeah. But the thing is the internet, even though there are people awakened on the side of the world, it's still dark. I mean there's just a whole physiological –
Well, like Twitter slows down at 11 o'clock.
Exactly. The people like – the internet does slow down for me. My interaction with the internet, like at a certain point at 4 a.m., I'm bored.
Why are you judging what you can do with your life simply by what's going on the internet?
Because this is why he couldn't go 24 hours. What else can you do? I mean, I can't go outside. Nothing's open at 4 in the morning.
You could if you lived in New York City or something, or Vegas.
Well, I don't. And who wants to live in Vegas? I'm sure we have listeners who live in Vegas.
I like Vegas, but I wouldn't want to live there. I mean, the thing I would take a sleep defer pill. Like if you could go deadline crunch, whatever, if you could defer 3 nights of sleep for 3 days later in the week, I would totally do that.
But
I would not sleep. If I had a pill that would let me not sleep with no, I didn't go schizophrenic or start getting crazy or anything, I would totally do that. No questions.
Okay.
You live a double life.
Right. I mean, I would pull a Charles Kuralt, have a secret family someplace.
I think it's hard to get my head around the idea of an uninterrupted existence. Like you're used to having that daily break where you kind of reboot and start over on a new day. If you're just constantly awake all the time and it's just an endless stream of consciousness, seems like it would
I mean,
drive you
you've
crazy.
Done all-nighters, right?
Yeah, but obviously not more than one or two. I think probably the longest
two at a time
been.
Is the most.
Yeah, that's
really
the and I couldn't do that again now.
Breaks
I'm too
and stream
old.
Of consciousness are important. Yeah.
That's true.
Well-being.
Well, unless you have the magic pill. I don't know. I mean, I used to be able to sleep. I used to be able to do what Norm did when I was in my 20s. I can't do it anymore. I can't not sleep that much. It doesn't work.
Right.
I get cranky and irritated.
All right. How about this one, Norm? Would you rather go without food for 48 hours or have to stay awake for 48 hours?
48 hours?
Yeah, because 24 is too easy.
Caffeine or no?
It's too easy to stay awake for 24 hours.
I would go without sleep for 48 hours, but still be able to eat. That would be awesome.
Okay.
Have you ever gone without sleeping long enough that you hallucinated? 72 hours is the usual limit for that.
No, I've been so tired though, and so desperately wanting to sleep when I can't. Like I'm at an airport or something.
Yeah.
Like the last time I came back from Vegas when we did that all night at Planet Hollywood. I so desperately wanted to sleep that I totally understand why that is a form of torture.
Yeah.
Like I'd be willing to tell you any secrets. Well, just let me sleep. I'm so fucking miserably tired.
And I mean, that's a good example because like that day I had gone into bed at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I slept for 3 or 4 hours before we left.
Yeah.
And that 4 hours was the difference between me being functional and able to drive and stuff the whole way home.
Right.
Or not the whole way home, but converse with Melissa who was driving and then drive the last 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And being a zombie.
Well, because
Norman and Joey and Anna were zombies in the back.
I had been perpetuating this fallacy up until this most recent trip. I no longer believe this after this trip, but I'd been saying for a long time, oh, it's better just to go straight through than it is just to sleep for 2 or 3 hours. Like it's worse.
No, that's not true.
It's get any sleep you can is always better.
Well,
even if it's only an hour.
An hour, 30 minutes, I think under an hour.
You will wake up groggy for a bit.
Yeah.
But you'll ultimately have plugged your iPhone
in. And in Vegas,
for a little bit more charge.
You will have walked away with more money, possibly.
Not in my case.
Well, no, I said if you get the sleep.
Oh, right. Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Quit when you're... Cases.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
I'm calling it. Good show, guys.
How much would you want to eat that Scotch bonnet, the whole thing? Just eat it.
$10,000.
I think you'd kill yourself. I think it could actually be medically very dangerous.
I think it would be. You'd have to get a stomach replacement.
There would be an ambulance involved. Yeah.
I bet you'd slough. $10,000.
They would have to pump your stomach, I think. Yeah. I think.
I don't know.
Medically, that would be true.
They would.
Really?
I think you could have very serious issues.
Oh. What if could you like pre-coat with Pepto-Bismol? Because I've done that before with spicy food.
This is why I miss being younger. In my 20s, there were always people that were stupid enough to do this kind of shit.
Yeah, where's Viderman when we need
him? Yeah, exactly. I saw a friend of mine ate a whole jar of super hot English mustard one time.
I had a guy who
was
drank
violently ill the rest of the day.
Oh, I knew a guy who drank a bottle of Tabasco once. Not one of the little dinko ones, but a big one. We had to pop the plastic thing.
But Tabasco isn't even that hot. I mean, obviously in that volume, in that quantity, it's not good, but Tabasco's not that hot.
No, but I mean in that quantity it did unpleasant things. I witnessed the aftermath.
Yeah.
It wasn't good.
I like Tabasco. Tabasco and Sriracha are good.
I always ask if they have anything else. I like Cholula and Tapatio and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Tapatio,
is that what it's called?
Tapatio, that's the best.
Sriracha is good, though. I like sriracha. I put sriracha in salad dressing sometimes.
Oh, it's not bad.
Like a ranch salad dressing with a little sriracha squirt on top.
It's spicy Thousand Island.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I'm getting hungry.
Let's go get some lunch.